Honorable members, are we not having our own quorum? I'm suspecting we have a long day today. Good morning to everybody, the committee members, our GM, EG, and your entourage, and our own visitors at the back. We're starting this week with some bad news called tragedy. Maybe before we must do anything, we must rise and have a silence of moment of what happened to the nation. May their soul rest in peace. Amen. I do welcome honorable members and our department and visitors. We have an agenda in front of us. I'm proposing amendments in the agenda that we must not start with the minutes and matters arising. Let's start with briefings, but also due to what we've just said, our minister will be joining us, starting somewhere. You know what is happening in the country, but he sent our DM, but it's confirmed that after finishing what he's doing this morning, he will be joining us. Can we, by that note, taking that, let's start with the 3.2, not the 3.1, and then the announcement will be on the appeals board. Let's look at our agenda, number one and number two, to be the end of the meeting. On the briefings, let's start with the Director General of the Department. And let me, on behalf of the Minister, saying that he will be joining us late, but we have a pleasure of having our DM. Maybe that's what I've discussed with the UDM, that let's start with the briefing of the Director General. I'm suspecting that we recognize that our deputy minister, when the minister is not around, has got a role to play. But we agreed that maybe in case that we do feel that they must be both here, let's start with 3.2. Anyone to adopt the agenda as amended? Honorable Manana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I adopt the minister as amended, the agenda, sorry. Thank you.
Honorable Fidan.
Thank you, sir. I second Honorable Manana.
Thank you. Okay. Members, DM, DG, we are welcoming in this committee of yours and of ours. Can we give the chance to our Director General to take us through? I'm suspecting we have the whole day today, so we must not take our own time talking too much. Today is not about us, it's about our department. To you, DG, maybe you may introduce your entourage. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Morning, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister of Sport and Recreation South Africa, Honorable Hector Stevens, and Unfortunately, the Deputy Minister is not part of my entourage, so...
I'm part of his entourage.
But accompanying the Deputy Minister to the Portfolio Committee this morning is the CFO of the Department of Sport and Recreation, Mr. Makoto Matlala, and Ms. Nalin Rosol, who is the advisor to Minister Mbalula. And we also have the audit chief audit executive in the department, Ms. Nozipiwo Lubanga. And we have a parliamentary liaison officer of the department, Ms. Kenetri Musenefi, and the PA of the Deputy Minister, Mr. Jeffs Ikok. So I'm going to, without waste of time, Chair, start first with the presentation on the third quarter, quarterly performance information reporting for that purpose. If members are aware, I would not take too much of the time, but the third quarter looks at October to December 2014. But the quarterly information and quarterly report, performance report, this report, we ultimately have four of them, which makes up the annual report, and we submit the final thing to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation and the Audit Committee of the Department, as well as the National Treasury for analysis and advice when necessary. But I will, as part of the third quarter reporting now that we are almost at the end of the fourth quarter, I will also have the opportunity to brief the Portfolio Committee about some of the issues that may have been overtaken by events in the third quarter. Because ultimately, we do not present the fourth quarter report to Parliament. By the time we come here, now we'll be presenting the annual report. So, and the last picture the committee sees is actually one of the third quarter. So allow me to indicate on program one, that in program one, we had three targets scheduled. We had not achieved those three targets. And we have, however, since then in quarter four, have achieved all in all in this program one, in administration, we had four outstanding targets. We have now in quarter four have achieved three of the four. So we remain outstanding with one target, which is an external survey of satisfaction by federations, sport federations, and that's what we are looking at this moment to try and complete before the financial year end. But in essence, as you may see, in quarter four we had overtaken what we couldn't achieve in quarter three. I think what makes quarter three a bit difficult for us is that most of our biggest events in the department happen in quarter three. And quarter three is also very short in the sense that December, most staff take leave after the National School Sport Championship. But if you look at that quarter, we have the Indigenous Games in there. We have the School Sport National Championship. We have the Sport Awards. We have the Nelson Mandela Sport and Culture Day. So the bulk of our staff are diverted to these major programs during that period. And you may see that in terms of the new APP we are presenting, we have reduced targets in quarter three, and we have spread those targets now to quarter four, more so in administration, because largely we use the period January to March to do administrative work in the department, in the main. And the bulk of the work that needs to be done, which the public don't get to see, but it's internally linked things there. For instance, some of the things that we had set ourselves a target to achieve is a score of 4. This now has been added to my new performance agreement with the minister, that the department must achieve a score of 4. We are so far at the rating of 2.8. We last year achieved a score of 3 for the committee to be aware. There was no department that reached a score of 4. The scores are 1, 2, 3, and 4 only. There's no 5. So we got a score of 3, and we are striving towards a score of 4. But by quarter 3, we were at 2.8. So our view is that we'll end up at about 3.2 or somewhere there at the rate of delivery. But we want to be the first government department to achieve a 4 on MPAT. Basically, in MPAT, if you achieve a 4, it will mean that you have complied with every single thing. You are a perfect department, and you have, during the course of the financial year, both on performance as well as compliance and regulatory environment, you have done everything perfect and have not done anything wrong. So that's a hard feat to follow, but we are committed to that score. And the minister has now said the department must achieve a 4, so we are working towards that. On training of staff, we are now busy with training. We will exceed the target of 40, which is where we are now. As we speak, even today, a majority of our staff members are in training, whether be it on facilities or on anything, but they are undertaking training because this is the best time for us to do this. The issue of the external plan survey I've spoken to, and we are waiting for the federations to give us feedback. We hope that if we get all the feedback we require by this Friday, that target 2 will meet it before 31st March in that regard. In program 2, Chair, as you may see, we have this far in the financial year have actually gone beyond the target so far of what we are supposed to do. In quarter 3, we did 5 against a target of 2, and we are confident that we will achieve all the targets by the end of the financial year. The Active Nation program, as you may remember, is the former mass participation program, and this includes a number of participation promotion programs among citizens. If you look at the recreational programs and campaigns implemented, National Youth Camp, Big Walk, and the Golden Games, we have achieved the annual target reached for the number of participants across the recreational programs. Again, on-spot promotion campaigns and events implemented with the Cycle for Life and during the Nelson Mandela Sport and Culture Day, we also there managed to achieve the national target. The participant in sport and recreation promotion campaigns, events, again, we have also hit the national target and actually exceeded it. On the South African Schools National Championship, supported this happened and it was quite successful, and the numbers keep on increasing on an annual basis. We are already having a review and a rethink of this. I've briefed the committee previously that would want to deliver this quite differently from now. The Mass Participation and Sport Development Conditional Grant Quarterly Reports, we will now meet the target. We were worried because of the challenges with the Northwest. And the committee would remember that I had briefed the committee at my last appearance that we will withhold the grants to the Northwest Province, which we did. And now, after extensive discussions and the facilitation and mediation by the National Treasury, the Premier of the Northwest had finally agreed that he would then take recreation and spot and retain them as one portfolio. Because previously he had split the portfolio. While we respect the Premier's powers of determining how his government must be structured, but the truth of the matter is that sport and recreation is a concurrent function. And even in the Constitution, conservation is one portfolio, environmental affairs is one portfolio, tourism is one portfolio, but art and culture is also listed as art and culture as one portfolio. And sport and recreation are also listed as such. So, but what the Premier had done was to split sport and put recreation with art and culture and put sport with basic education. This created an administrative nightmare of how the transferring arrangements were going to be and how coordination of the programs were going to be. And you can imagine it was a hard pill to swallow for the Premier to agree that he has to change that. But I was already reported even to the President that I'm refusing to transfer the money. But we had to do it. Otherwise, if we were to allow that, then the administration of sport will be chaotic across provinces. But now we are confident we'll reach the target. We have transferred the money to them, and we will be able to get all the quarterly reports in this regard. In terms of schools provided with sport equipment and apparel, in quarter three it was 0 of 40, but you now see that we have now overtaken this. I think we have already in quarter four, so far we have already distributed to 350 schools who are still giving. By end March we would have distributed to a further 600, I think, yes. But ultimately, from this year going forward, because of the performance agreement the minister has signed with the president, the president wants us to give 6,400 schools a year sport equipment. This is a tall order because we are being given an unfunded mandate, essentially, because there's no increase in the budget. In fact, as the committee may be aware, our budget is being docked back. So this year in the new APP, you may have seen that we had had to do away with some of the other programs to make way for what the president requires to get equipment to schools. So consequently, we have reprioritized some of the programs like SASRECON. We used to have it twice a year. We used to have it once every 2 years. We will now have it once every 4 years. So we are linking it and aligning it to the Olympic cycle. So, but that saves us money to redirect some of the resources towards provision of, and so we have done the same with a whole host of many of our programs. We had to have a total review in this regard to meet the targets. But now we will, at the end of the financial year, meet the full target for provision of sport equipment and apparel to schools. The participants in the school sport programs, 11,398 against the target of 10,000. We are still in the process of verification of this, but we are confident that we will exceed it because at the actual championship, we had about 13,000 participants, including chaperones, coaches, and technical officials, referees, and all sorts of people. But we are still in the process of verification. We have to verify each and every single form because some of the kids get disqualified. And once you are disqualified, either because of age cheating or something like that, then we don't count you into the total of the verified figures. So we are this far, have recorded it, not achieved, although we know that ultimately after verification, we will exceed the number 10,000 at national championship. In terms of program three, as you may see in program three, it appears that the winning nation, the attackers that we have not yet met, but you would quickly see that we would meet many of those. For starters, we are supposed to support international events receiving intergovernmental support. We had had then the BMX African Championship, which we provided support to. But as soon as we now do the verification for the rest of the other programs we have supported, you would see that we have actually now in quarter four exceeded the annual target with everything we have done, including the mountain bike championships. We are now also supporting, we have just provided support to triathlon, and we have also extended support to the World Squash Championships that are coming, and we are working with them. So we will exceed this target by far, and in what I've reported, I've still not included the youth championships that we have put in this regard. On recognition and honoring events, the Sport Awards took place and then Drumlangen Golf Day and Green Champions were held. Four events were recorded and they took place in quarter one and two in quarter three, but we couldn't record the two due to insufficient evidence on them. I think this is the key issue our department is grappling with, that a lot of work is being done, but the type of information the Auditor General requires for us to record that as evidence is what is the gap. And often than not, sometimes we are there even to take cell phone videos, you know, to prove to the AG that this took place, you know. So, and these are real issues because also our team of auditors have changed completely. Previously, the other team used to accept a report approved by the Auditor General of the incident or the event that took place. Now, the new team doesn't accept that as proof. They say they want something else that can prove that. So often we'll have like posters and pamphlets mobilizing for the event and so on. And all of this, we now keep something called a portfolio of evidence. I've now written to all the directors to say that those who don't keep the portfolio will face disciplinary hearings. And since then, a lot of accountability for this evidence has improved significantly. But we still have gaps because we and the team are not on the same rhythm about what really constitutes evidence, acceptable evidence that the event took place, because simply we will simply not afford making a video for each and every event that we do. Often photographs must be sufficient, but sometimes we are being told that these photographs don't show anyway that it is the event, it is what we are talking about. So we have a dilemma in terms of this. I mean, when we open facilities in far-flung areas, we will not be able to send a photographer everywhere we go. And so I think it's a bit of a challenge in respect of this key issue. On the issue of Atlas coaches assisted by means of scientific support program, this far we had reached 31 out of 40 in quarter three. But in quarter four, we have now overtaken this target, the annual target, and we are convinced that we will achieve it. By quarter three, we had received only 5 articles for the ThinkSport Journal. But I can report now that we have the full complement of the 10 articles we have sent the ThinkSport Journal for printing now as we speak. And it will be released next week. And a closed report will also be submitted for that purpose. So we are guaranteed that we will achieve the knowledge management system programs 2 out of 2 target of the year. The athletes supported through the Ministerial Sports Bursary program, by quarter three, we had 6 out of 40, and there is a reason for this. This number now of the athletes has increased to 55. You'll recall that we select the learners in December at the National School Sport Championship. And so typically, we are only to achieve this target in January when we enroll the kids into the schools. So we have now exceeded that target of 40. We are now, we would be about 53 of the 55 because I'm told that 2 are being disqualified. So the challenge we have with this program now, and which will be a challenge going forward, and then how we must deal with it, is that typically we select the kids in December, and by January they have to be sent to the schools. But the biggest problem is that we have not yet done scientific testing on them. And so, because the schools don't want to take them around much, and obviously the academic year has already progressed, they want to take the kids as early as possible to the sport focus schools. But we then send the kids to testing around April to determine scientifically if the latent talent the talent scouts have seen on the field is matched by scientific evidence. And the disappointing thing is that 32% of these kids have failed the scientific tests. So, which then means that in terms of our agreement, we have to terminate the support to these kids. And we have just been inducted by so many letters of parents saying please. And so it is a dicey situation because it's the first time we face it in this way. Previously, it was easier when the numbers were fewer. We had like 14 of the kids, two were disqualified because we discovered that they cheated on age. Actually, another girl had participated in another one's birth certificate, and I think this is where the teachers fail our children. In order to make sure that the kids look good, the bigger kid who must compete in under 17 is made to compete with the 14-year-olds in under 15, and they use the birth certificate of another child to say this is the child, and you have no way of verifying it at the championship until now the kid has been selected. And the kid now, we need the real documentation and the real name, because Maria Mutweni can't continuously be Jocelyn whoever forever, you know. So the truth has got to come out, and whether to disqualify two of them like that, and then two of them failed tests, so it was easy to manage. But now with the bigger numbers, if you're at 55 and you find that 13 of these children don't meet the scientific standards to for the coach who are putting them in, it's a bit of a challenge. So we had agreed that before termination, let's offer them a second round, and let's see whether they may not be talented in related codes. And so if perhaps they can, then we can retain them. But and that's where the disjuncture between the talent scouts and the science is at. And there's really no perfect system to this with the capacity we have. On the issue of the drug-free sport agencies, we supported by quarter three, we have supported one of five, but now you would see that we have supported we have actually gone to six of the targets. We have exceeded those targets. So the RADO, the Regional Anti-Doping Agency, we had done work with them, and the Youth Games in Botswana, we also provided the funding for the testing. We have helped the laboratory in Bloemfontein to do this turnaround, and we have completed the work with them. They were almost to lose their accreditation and licensing by WADA internationally due to the fact that the conference we hosted here in South Africa, Johannesburg, had approved a new code, WADA code, which new agencies, all agencies must comply with. But previously, tests like EPO, basically the blood oxygenation test, were not compulsory for entities like this nature to undertake. But with the new code, those things are compulsory, where athletes inject themselves and pump oxygen into the muscles to make the muscles bigger, and also inject more oxygen into the blood so that when the muscle is heavily oxygenated, when a sprinter jumps from cradle and starts running, it takes them about 2 seconds before the oxygen, when the muscles heat up, the oxygen then gets into the muscles, and which makes them more flexible, and then they run better and quicker and faster. But then all that is done by adrenaline. So here they give themselves an artificial adrenaline before they go. So from the first second this person is, he's already on a high, you know, so yeah, sort of. So but those tests were not compulsory before. Now they are. And our laboratory in Bloemfontein, we didn't have the requisite funding to buy the new machinery to be able to do this new test and this new standard. So we are providing them with full support. This coming financial year, we'll give them their first tranche of $6 million to buy the new equipment. We are to give them additional resources. Over the next 3 years, we will ultimately scale up to $28 million, what they need to be fully compliant. And we have been working with WADA Africa office based in Cape Town to try and find a workable plan so that the only laboratory in Africa on anti-doping tests shouldn't be disqualified. If you remember, the last laboratory, we had two, and the one in Tunis, in Tunisia, was stripped of its accreditation. So this one remains the only laboratory in Bloemfontein that we have that is able to do this work on the entire African continent. So you would see quickly that we had exceeded the target of five there in quarter four. In sports support, Chair, you would also see that in quarter three we did exceed the target that we had, but we still have one outstanding target, which I can indicate to you that that too we will exceed. We in bilateral relations, we participated in the bi-national commission held in Gaborone, Botswana. Right now, I've sent a delegation to Lesotho to work on the high altitude training center and our bilateral with them. And we are also working on the exchange around major events and utilization of high performance centers, community creation, and the hosting of the 2014 Africa Youth Games. You'll also see that we are working now with the Russians and the Jamaicans. We are revising our agreement with Russia, more so around sports science. The Russians are good on this area of work. And with the Jamaicans, we're looking specifically at the exchange of coaches. We need their track coaches in athletics, and they need, they are building a strong base now for cricket as part of the West Indies franchise. So we are now, will be supporting them with junior cricket coaches, and they will be giving us the track coaches to train our children in school sport, or train the trainer to train teachers in coaching. So that work is ongoing. A delegation from Jamaica is scheduled to reach our shores in a week's time, and our minister has been invited to go oversee the Jamaican School Sports Championship, and the minister will be accompanied by our chief director responsible for school sports on Gemdro. So We are looking at this exchange bearing fruit on us, and we have also received an approach. We had a long-standing agreement with the UK, and as you are aware, the UK Sport, which is the equivalent of the Department of Sport in the UK, had now extended its support, and they are helping us on our bid for the 2022 Commonwealth Games. Next is the multilateral engagements that we are supporting in this regard. We participate in the AU Sport Council Region 5, and we had finalized the country report, and we presented it in the meeting in Lilongwe, Malawi on the 8th of November. In terms of this, you'll also be aware that the Deputy Minister is the chair of the UN Agency for Physical Education and Sport, and is also the chair of the Working Group on Sport for Peace and Development. And we are also participating in GSEPs and MINAPs, and both the two country reports were finalized, and that in quarter four would make sure that we exceed the annual target that had been set. And we had now been approached, and I think maybe I must... We have now been approached that Cuba, which is the current chair of the UN Conference of Parties on Sport and Recreation, will not be standing for a further four-year term in 2017. They have 2016, next year. They have made an approach to us that because of the work South Africa has done in the Secretariat, they are actually proposing... and the members of the executive are proposing that we release the deputy minister to become the new chair of the UN Conference of Parties. So the minister is considering the proposal in line with the requirements that we would need from us and what we need to set up as a department to provide leadership for the world in sport. So from that point of view, that just goes to show the kind of work we do in multilateral engagements, let alone the new architecture of the machinery of the AU Sports Commission that replaces the Supreme Council of Sport in Africa. But also importantly, the work we do in CAMS, the Committee of African Ministers of Sport, that too, our participation has been quite good, and we handed over to the Ivory Coast last year. So we have exceeded our target in terms of participation and the work that we do in multilateral institutions. Now, by quarter three, the target that we had not met was one for the transformation progress report, which we have to do one barometer a year. I can guarantee members that we had scheduled to release this barometer on sport transformation this Thursday. But this Thursday is also the memorial service of the late Minister Collins Chabane, and we have a letter from the presidency indicating that we must scale down on all major announcements and on that day. So we had scheduled this to next week. We would still release it before the end of the financial year. So that target will be met in quarter four with certainty. In infrastructure support, Chair, this is the only area I can indicate that by the end of the financial year, we would have in this space, we have two targets. One is providing support to, technical support to municipalities as well as provinces on sport and recreation facilities, and more so the norms and standards and their articulation. That we have achieved. But the one other target which we will not achieve by the end of the financial year is the issue of the audit of sport facilities. At the last appearance here, I had briefed the committee that we had planned to achieve all in 9 provinces at the same time in the same financial year. But we have depended on the CSIR for them to develop the system for us. And I did report then, back then, that the CSIR came back and gave us a proposal or a quotation for the development of the system, and it was $47 million. And while science and technology have said it will share 50-50 with us, we don't have the 50% of the $47 million to do this work. And our anticipation was that if indeed this was to come at about $4 million, we would have done it with ease. But because our budget for it was $4 million. But clearly, we had underestimated what the system requires and what needs to be done. So we have to go back to the drawing board on this target and see how we will get it done. But we will not achieve it by the end of the financial year. And most likely, it will be the only target we don't achieve this financial year. On the issue of the sport and recreation facilities assisted with technical support during construction, this one was delayed because our only engineer had resigned somewhere and found a better paying job in KwaZulu-Natal. So, and he left. So we had to find a new person. But in the meantime, we agreed with Sport for Change program and KfW, the German bank, had agreed, because Treasury says we can't hire consultants. So KfW bank agreed that it will pay the person to do the work. And I can assure you now that with the building of the new recreational facilities as well as the community outdoor gyms, we had actually exceeded the target of 3 in this regard. In terms of facilities, what it is, what I have reported will not achieve that. Now, having said all of this, we are convinced that by the end of the financial year, we will achieve almost all targets except the issue of the audit of facilities. So in quarter three, our translation was at 50% mark, but you would see that by end of quarter four, which ends on 31st March, we would have been above 90% mark in terms of all our targets. So I normally say this to my management committee that it doesn't matter how it started, it is how it ends that matters the most. So, and I think we will end on a high with a huge achievement of our set targets and targets approved by this committee and parliament in this regard. But we are convinced that we will be able to retain our clean audit, and we are also confident that we will not be qualified on performance information. In fact, with all the difficulties of portfolio of evidence and the new things we are grappling with, but we are guaranteed that we will have a good showing in terms of performance. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. It was unlike himself. He always want to prove that he's not just a short, but it's somebody who aspired to be on the height of myself to belong. So I'm suspecting that was helped him. Now, if DG, you don't want anyone to act on what you have said, may I give the chance to the honorable members to engage your presentation, in your presentation. Do you want anyone to add anything? they are shaking their heads, saying you've eaten the cake all. Honorable members, this is your time that you must engage with the DG's presentation. Honorable Maliga, Honorable Manana, Honorable Malatri, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Filjani, Honorable Musi, Honorable Whip, on that order, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation by the DG. It looks or sounds positive. I've got some few issues that I think I need clarity on, though. For instance, Chairperson, on the issue of the distribution of the equipment to schools, the indication is that they are almost there with the targets, but if they've only managed to distribute 350 and they are left with about 600 schools, I don't know what percentage is that, if that is correct. And also be interested in knowing as to how do they ensure that these equipments get to the intended recipients, other than just to say you have distributed and to find that along the way there are so many other people who are involved. You may find that sometimes they don't even get there. And I think I'm happy with the targets of about 6,000, because it will mean more will have to benefit. But I don't know as to, because these equipments if you give a school an equipment this year, 2 years maybe down the line, that equipment may not be used, may not be ready to be used. If there is a plan to look into those schools that have been given the equipment, to give them again, or you give them, and then, because schools are so many, you forget about them, you will come back maybe in 20 years and think about those schools. And lastly, Jefferson, is on the question of scientific tests versus the talent, because if learners identified based on the talents, on their performances, I'm not very sure as to how does this scientific test go and what does it do to stop an athlete from the talent that a person has. I need clarity, because if you are going to identify a player playing well with skills, and then you take the player to the scientific test and you say this one is disqualified, what do you mean by that? You mean this player can't perform? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, first thing, I would like to welcome the presentation. To me, it sounds straightforward, although I can say. So in the Active Nation, Chair, first thing, I must thank the department for inviting us to participate as a committee on the Nelson Mandela Sports and Culture Day in partnership with the Department of Arts and Culture. And I must congratulate the Portfolio Committee in Sports as well for participating and coming back with the medals on the 9 points. It's 10 kilometers, I can say. We do have the medals, Chaperson. Thank you. It's nice. It shows passion, Chaperson, that those people, the members who are serving in that PC sports, because that is assisting us as well. That is a means of verification. If the department invite us, we go there, we even participate, we get those medals. Isn't it that they didn't even get them somewhere, they procured them? If they tell us that we procured 150 medals and we are one of those participants who received them, thanks on that. And on the administration, Jefferson, the performance indicator, since they are rating MPAT, I'm looking forward maybe on the fourth quarter, maybe they can bring the maybe four, because the rating starts on 1 to 4. Maybe the 3, because you got on the rating on the per MPAT, you got to 2.8, if I'm not mistaken. That shows you have tried. You need to get more on that. On the recreational programs and campaigns, you did very well because the score is 3. That is a good achievement. You must really appreciate on that. Keep it up, I can say. The Active Nation, my question is that how many rural sports improvement programs have been rolled out in this financial year? Which areas have been benefited, and what are the other planned programs in this regard? Thank you, Chair. Honorable Sultan. I'm chairing. Honorable Sultan, take the platform.
Just taking that to make sure.
Daniel, don't want this platform that I'm giving to you.
Okay, let me take it, Chair. Wasn't quite through with preparing my question. Anyway, thank you.
That's fine. I'll shoot from the hip, as they say.
And we also welcome the opportunity of receiving this third quarter report. And it's quite exciting to see that so much has been done with so little in terms of the budget. And we hope that things can improve as we move forward. There's just a few light questions around Program 3. Some of the targets that were not met. And then on Program 5, what is the actual problem with auditing? You know, is it an internal capacity problem or what is it? Because I would say this is definitely not quite a light question, I must say, Chair, because money spent, we need to have that verification. Here, I have the explanation that the DG, you know, were put forward, you know, on portfolio presentation, or collection, rather, of the portfolio of evidence. And then the auditing is not compliant, you know. The proof that the money has been spent in a given manner is not audit compliant. Why is it that in the first place, the method used for collecting the evidence is not audit compliant? You know, that's my question. And on transfers, would you say that, I know that you didn't say this, but somehow we come to know that some transfers that were meant to have taken place have not, in particular the one to Sascoc. You know, what is the situation, you know, about transfer, supposed transfer to Sascoc? I know you didn't say anything about it, but we are aware, or we're mindful of the fact that that should have taken place here. And then schools, some of the schools were not provided with equipment and their apparel in the third quarter, any particular problem with that? And then lastly, you've given us the reasons or what you intend doing about provinces, you know, that has not complied with your expectations. But besides now where your intended solution, which is to take the responsibility away from the provinces and perhaps doing discharging this responsibility yourself, now how is that going to affect the running of the program? Because I suppose when you give responsibility to a province, you attach a budget which you transfer. Now, what are you going to do with that budget? Do you have internal capacity to execute that function which you would normally have, you know, when you defer to refer to the provinces, now that you intend taking it away from the provinces and doing the job yourselves? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Malaja.
Thanks, Chair. It's quite clear that the department is on the right track in terms of its targets, but I think there are some areas where there could be further improvement. I'd just like to find out from the DG what has been some of the things that have held back, particularly with regard to, I mean, I do take consideration of the explanation, for instance, for the failure to meet the targets for the training of staff, because sometimes information, when it, you know, when the presentations are compiled, it is before the information has changed. So by the time you come to the portfolio committee, there's been developments. But I'm quite curious of the reference to the bidding for the Commonwealth Games being one of the key factors that had led to that delay. Because because that could have just been factored in terms of the department's long-term plans. It wasn't something that, you know, fell up from the sky suddenly. It was something that was always on the table. So I'm curious that, you know, be that as it may, Foresight would have taken that into consideration, that, you know, this wasn't an unexpected eventuality. It was always part of the department's plans. And secondly, the issue with provinces. I mean, this is probably the second time that you have consistently referred to in the documents and lamented the lack of cooperation from provinces, particularly with, you know, the previously mass participation transfers, that, you know, by the time you require information to then consolidate the books, you don't get that level of cooperation from provinces. But we need to move from a period of lamenting to a period of action. And you previously alluded to the difficulties with Treasury about using incentive and punitive measures because that is beyond you. But we are consistently having a problem when the actions of departments, of provincial government departments that are not directly within your realm are holding back your performance. And sometimes, you know, we will ultimately not have that empathy of understanding because it is, there has to be a way. And in between restructuring that and liaising with the respective departments or with Treasury, there has to be a way of ensuring that there is consistent reportage that does not ultimately affect your performance, because that will, in the long term, and as it consistently shows now, it's impacting on your performance. But those are the actions of, you know, the non-provincial governments that you do not necessarily have a direct influence on in terms of taking punitive actions about them, but there's a way of restructuring resources in terms of rewarding consistency and reportage and not encouraging this trend to go on, because when there's no punitive measure, there's no incentive to discontinue with their behavior. And linked to that is the issue of the provision of sports equipment to schools. I recall that previously there were discussions about the establishment of a central procurement process for the distribution of this school equipment, and I just want to find out whether that process has been initiated and what is the latest with regard to that, and whether using that is a tactic to expedite the provision of those so that there are no delays with regards to reliance on provincial procurement processes. And lastly, with regard to the issues of the facilities audit, now that we know the difficulties that you have, what is the plan to expedite this and get it, you know, resolved? Because in your initial planning and what has subsequently transpired, there is a mismatch in terms of the resources that are at disposal. And when can we then have, you know, an indication of a new timeline for the finalization of this? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable
Brockman.
Thanks, Chair. Nicely covered. Thanks.
Honourable Musi. Honourable Strike.
Well, the intervention by the minister, for me, I mean, that is a program that we should increase, because it's a direct intervention by the government to ensure that we assist disadvantaged children to can get an opportunity to can perform at a very high level. So my worry really is around the scientific testing. We need to be sure that we have informed it, because I think Honorable Mabika has asked the same question. It's very easy that certain things beyond our control can end up disturbing what we think is the correct intervention in terms of ensuring that the disadvantaged also have got an opportunity to can perform at a high level. The second question really is issues that we have come across with you in the past engagement with yourselves around the filling of vacancies. I know that you touched on the fact that at least now you have sorted out the issue around HR plan, that now that HR plan is approved, but it still remains a key issue for us whether the necessary vacancies are being filled and we've got the necessary capacity that is required to do your work. The last area is around your performance. As of December, we're sitting at around 80%. Which means in the last quarter, you shall have exhausted your budget. The issue is the same. My concern is our ability as a department to can know where that provinces have spent. It is the same question that the Honorable Malachi is asking. How are we going to improve on beginning to can be satisfied that provinces are spending the money that has been given to them? The last point really it is something that we hope the minister will clarify, or maybe you might clarify. When we made our budget review recommendations, there were specific issues that we raised. One of which was the MIG. Are we making progress there around the municipal infrastructure grant? Because it remains something that at one point we were mooting the possibility that it should be handed over to us. And we were saying we'll have the ability to can spend that money. So I'm asking, are we willing in terms of the presentation that we made that we should have a way to can determine how that MIG, because as you know, it is now reinforced, but still there is still a process whether it is being utilized for what it was intended for. Thank you.
Excellent, that you were partly correct on the presentation of the minister. I'm sure he's going to elaborate more, but it doesn't matter if DG is responding. DG, can you give us some responses?
Yes, sir. I have some questions from my
We will work with the help with the National Department of Traditional Affairs, and the reason for that is that we too are concerned that the geographic spread of the Rural Sport Improvement Program is in looking okay at all, because for two solid years of implementation of financial years, the picture has been this huge from where it go. So we will now have a plan to go to the other provinces. We have already, as a start, agreed that in the next financial year, during April, one of the tournaments would be with the 60 villages in Tavant, in the Free State. So that's where the first break and the first outside the two provinces we would go to in this regard, because there are structures of traditional leadership across the country and which we can work with, but we have to admit that the participation has been skewed in favor of the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal up to now. So that's where the Rural Sport Improvement Program is. We have also agreed with the Department of Traditional Leadership that we will expand this, and we had agreed also that we would add the indigenous games codes into the Rural Sport Improvement Program, because so far it's only in Mvezo Traditional Council where, in addition to the two codes of football and netball, that they also did athletics. But what is interesting is that with Chavanchu, surprisingly, we have been requested to add softball to the two traditional codes. So we, however, will bring Diketo, Hadi, Njuba, Murabaraba, and all of that into the this. But this has a potential of significantly increasing the budget of what we allocate to the traditional house or the royal house that we work with. This far, we provide the chief with the equipment and funding for the tournament over a week. Some traditional houses only do it over the weekend, the 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, but the Amakosi becomes the custodian of the tournament. And in many instances, like it was quite nice to see what happened in Kumbu, where the Amakosi slaughter a sheep, a cow, for people who were at the tournament to eat, and also put up a sheep from his royal kraal that the winning team then share the sheep, you know, and they get to do a prize, you know, something, I don't know what they do with the sheep itself, but this is quite interesting to see how it pans out. And the good thing about Amakosi is that in those tournaments there is the highest levels of discipline, and you also find that the participants generally are very eager, and the camaraderie and spirit of community converges in that weekend over that tournament. And the equipment, the chief takes care of the equipment very well, because after then they collect all the equipment for the tournament and is kept. So in Mvezo, where we went twice now, we had found that the equipment we left the previous year was still in good working condition and well taken care of. And we encourage that happens. So we will certainly expand to the other provinces, and we would also see that the traditional games and indigenous games are added there too. And this has been an issue facilitated at the level of two deputy ministers, the deputy minister of sport and the deputy minister of traditional affairs of Papela, have agreed that we have to collaborate more around the two programs, this one and also the indigenous games program. So this is where the future of the expansion of the program would be at in this regard. With regards to the issue of transfers to SASCOC,
We have now transferred to SASCOC after they have fully complied. I will repeat this to this committee. We will not transfer a cent to a federation until that federation has fully complied. Even if you are the mighty SASCOC, we will not give you the money unless we have everything that we need out of you. And with SASCOC, I can tell you where the resistance on their part has been around. In the past, SASCOC was the one that determined how many medals we're going to get at an Olympics. But we differ. We don't agree that that is the way it should go. We believe that the political office of the ministry must actually determine such a target. It can't be that SASCOC tells the deputy minister and the minister that we are going to have 12 medals and we are not told where the medals are going to come from and from which athletes, on what basis, and these athletes, how are they supported to get to those medals. Everywhere else, those who give money call for the outcomes of how the money must be used and how it must be determined. And we always had a big role. The DM would know that prior to the 2012 London Olympics, we had a big issue. There were athletes who wrote to the deputy minister, including Ant van Dijk, who ultimately went on to medal in the Paralympics, who were not given the money to prepare for the Olympics. Even the rowing team that got the medals there were left out on the basis that they are not ranked in the top eight in the world, and therefore there will stand no chance of medaling. But we were bold enough to again ask our scientific support unit to say, can you evaluate these athletes that have returned to us complaining? They seem to be believing in themselves that they can achieve something. Can we look at their previous performances? Look at the performances of their competitors and see whether those athletes would medal or not. We did the exercise and we found that compared to their competitors, it appeared that on face value that they would win, but they needed the support. So when we transferred money to SASCOC that year, we ring-fenced money to athletes, much to the chagrin of SASCOC. They were not happy at all about what we were doing, but we were very clear. This money, you shall use it to prepare rowing for this. You shall use it to even Bridget Hartley, even Sunet for you. So all of them, we had to ring-fence money around them. And we said this money shall be used for those athletes. This one is in a pool. You can use it anyhow you see for Team South Africa to help prepare the rest of the team. But this specific athletes, you shall spend so much on them and on their needs. So SASCOC was saying we are interfering with their business of preparing and selecting a team. But we were not actually selecting a team. We're saying that support these elite athletes, and when they are supported, if they do qualify, then put them in your team, you know. So that's how we saw it. But as they say, the rest is history. The athletes, majority of them, whom we ring-fenced money around, came back with the medals. And our scientific support unit had actually counted the medals, tally to six, and we actually got six medals. So the idea that was branded around that we'll get 12 medals, we don't want to argue like that in the public. And yes, 12 medals in 2012, you know. So we can't go on like that. So this time around, we wanted to determine for SASCOC how much medals they must bring to us with the money we give them. And we imposed 8 medals. We said we want 8. So it was the first time the issue of the outcome of the medals was added to the performance agreement between us and SASCOC. So this has not been done before. So you could understand the reluctance of signing the agreement and bringing it back to us. So, but after steadfastness, they ultimately signed. I think they were already having cash flow problems and a lot of things. But we were steadfast that we would not sign, and I think I should thank the political leadership of the department for standing behind me. I missed the barrage by the leadership of SASCOG and everything. A lot of things were said about me to the federations and SWAT and some, but I just said I've got a job to do and I'll stick by it. So, and finally, the thing has been signed, we have paid them. Life goes on, as they say. So, but the target of 8 medals is in the agreement, and I think it will be a target we measure them about when we go to Rio, and they have not given us the medals that we require, but it's not fair to enter that target in the Olympic year. Actually, we should have entered that target earlier, at the beginning of the cycle. And so for that reason, we decided that we would not demand the 11 medals, particularly more so for what we consider borderline athletes. So because we believe that if Casper is supported better, she actually can come back and deliver a medal. If she also sorts out her personal issues, she can. But to add her now is not fair on SASCOG to do it. So we have only targeted 8 on the basis of the 8 active athletes we see that they are continuously dominant on the field, even now 2 years before, a year before the Olympics, so to say. So we are convinced that if they use the money to support those 8 athletes, we have this time not listed the athletes. We have simply said we want 8 medals. But if I was them, I would really look at who is going to give me these medals and support those athletes and focus on them more. And not do this thing that says if you qualify, even by Olympic standard G, you must be included into the team. I think that's wrong. You'd see that our team was still cumbersome and big in London, but in essence it had decreased almost by 40%. So we think that we must decrease that team even further. The portfolio committee will remember the case of Sylvester Spielman, the guy who qualified by Olympic standard C by invitation. The Olympic movement has this thing of the belief that Olympism means that even smaller countries that can't make it by this must be invited, so they get the exposure and everything about the Olympics. So they invited Sylvester Spielman in snow sport, he's a skier. So, but our country is not strong in Winter Olympic tradition, and we knew that he stand no chance of meddling at all. And because he was invited to come participate, we were under so tremendous pressure from the media that we must send the athlete to Sochi, Russia, to go compete, you know, and so on. But we refused because we understood that sending Sylvester Spielman, we would spend no less than 13.8 million. That was the calculation at the time. Because we have to send a team manager. He, as an athlete, can attend the self-division meetings on a daily basis at 7. So we have to send a self-division. We must also send a team doctor. We must send a physiotherapist that must massage him and before training and after and so on. We also have to send a nutritionist with him. We have to, the entire team, just to support one athlete that's not going to medal, is not cost effective. And I think the emotions aside, we just have got to be practical. And I think even going forward, I'm not being harsh to our athletes and I'm not being considerate to the hours that they put in the morning and everything. But equally, I don't believe that we should be emotionally blackmailed into agreeing to send athletes that we know don't stand a chance of winning. So I think we have to make tough choices as a country and say, let's send a team that we know. If in that team, for every 3 athletes we send 1 medal, then I think it's a good ratio. But then I think it's okay. But it can be, as is the current situation, for every 11 athletes we had sent to London, 1 medal. So, I mean, we must agree that that's not the way to go. But we are not SASCOG, so we don't decide the rules of engagement, and we don't decide the rules about how athletes are selected and who ultimately is Team South Africa. We support that team when it is selected. But there's a way in which we can influence the application of that decision. And that we attach money to it. I think money will call for everything. Next is the issue of the provinces. Look, we have transferred to all provinces except Northwest. And I will link what Honorable Sultani has raised with what Honorable Malachi has also raised. This issue of provinces, we agree, is a problem. Sometimes it's a good problem. But sometimes it's just basically frustrating. However, our commitment remains not just to wield the stick, but to also support provinces in order to meet their requirements. And we had expanded our grant administration unit now. We have a full-time grant administrator. We have also seconded two other staff members to work on the issues of the grant. The good thing about this process, Honorable Malas, is that unlike 2 years ago, it's maturing and it's maturing fast. We now are seeing provinces. You'd recall that earlier, or perhaps even before the term of this committee, Honorable Musi is one of the few who was in the old days, but he would recall that the Auditor General used to come brief the committee and half our audit queries were on the administration of the grant. Right now, you can see that almost has been eliminated. What we remain with, now we are fighting about the quality of reporting. Not that the report has not come. The reports do come now, and they know, because they know that they're not going to get the money. And when I came here then, when I arrived, to ask the portfolio committee to give me support, and also I asked the select committee in the NCOP to say, please bear with me. Rather, the Auditor General come to you to complain that I have left with money and I have not transferred money to provinces. That's a lesser evil. It's an evil because children need the facilities, they need the money, they need everything to perform. But it is also highly irresponsible for any accounting officer to transfer money to people who simply can't account for the use of that money. That's even a worse evil. So I was willing to die for the lesser evil and be punished for that. Unfortunately, the two committees that DG will support you don't transfer to anybody who doesn't account. And with that, and with the support of Treasury and the Ministry, we were able to change the attitude and the situation around. Right now, everyone, I can assure you, is reporting. The issue of the Northwest, it wasn't because they were not willing to report or whatever. Even the staff in the department were frustrated. Recreation was there, sport was there, and so on, and it was in one single decision that made sure there is gross disjuncture. And this paralyzed the province and our relations for almost 9 months of the financial year. It was that terrible, but I think we have overcome that now. After many exchange of letters and meetings and everything, even the Treasury had no longer kept that money. The CFO can tell you. They had already reallocated the money because I had asked that they give us the money for the Northwest and we give it to the provinces under pressure like the Northern Cape and others. And they said no. If the money Northwest doesn't comply and doesn't use this and doesn't comply with the grant framework, surrender it back to us, DG. So I'm allowed in terms of the DORA to withhold the money only for 90 days. And after then, I have to give a motivation to the Treasury if I still want to withhold it. And if that motivation is not acceptable, then I must surrender back the money. So I had no choice. When the period expired, we surrendered it back to Treasury. But after the deal with the Premier, we had to now go back to the Treasury and beg them to say, that money we surrendered, can you please return? And they were saying, where do you think we're going to get money now? Where? But ultimately, they agreed and they gave back the money. I'll leave the issue of the penalties to the CFO to address when he does that, what we are dealing with and how we are dealing with that. Now I'll deal with the issue of the school sport and the apparel. Let me start first by answering Honorable Malazi and say that the issue of the Commonwealth Games and why it had impacted on training, it wasn't as if it was not planned and how it came about. But I have to explain to you that even with your best bet and best of planning, none of us had anticipated. We had honestly believed that Canada, having done all that it did, it will brave the storm to the end. This is what we had truly believed, that they will then hold their own, because they had declared in the circles of the Commonwealth Games that now they are going to give Durban a run for their money. But we knew from onset that the strategy we had of engaging all the Commonwealth countries on the African continent, because Britain had largely colonized Africa the most. So African countries of the Commonwealth constitute about 43% of the vote of the Commonwealth. And we engaged them at the Youth Games in Botswana. And all of them, of course, Zimbabwe was there as an observer, is not allowed to participate in the Commonwealth. But all of them committed to vote for us, and they agreed that they want the Games to come here. So when we engaged with the Oceania Conference of the Commonwealth, the small islands, and they also took a decision that they would support South Africa, immediately we had about 64% of the vote. So the writing was on the wall for everybody, and that's why the other four cities withdrew. But the Canadians decided, with the support of the Australians, that they were going to brave it out and that they will turn this thing around. And they started a very terrible campaign in our country. They began getting newspapers and everybody to ask us about the money, whether we've got the capacity. There was just a terrible against the spirit of the Commonwealth. But the good thing about this was that all other countries of the Commonwealth saw through this thing, and they could see what was happening, and it made their resolve even better, because the smaller islands are of the opinion that being small means that they will never host these games, ever. And if they were to allow the so-called the Mighty Four in the Commonwealth to continue to do as they please, then the rest of the Commonwealth countries will never host anything. So for that reason, everyone was now determined to support them. And they did everything, the Canadians. I can assure you that we have this far spent a minute amount of money on BD. But hey, even in London for the Commonwealth Games, in Scotland, in Glasgow, they had a big party there. They had a cocktail. I mean, my staff, I allowed them to go and have fun at the expense of Canada. But the truth of the matter, the truth of the matter is that we held our own. And so because of that sudden change with the withdrawal, there were many other things that needed to be done almost immediately at the same time. And there was no way of doing it except to redirect staff to focus on the web with them. So I think that's where the impact is, and some of the training had to be postponed. And then we agreed that we'd finish off the training in January. So it wasn't because of lack of planning or any other thing. But in essence, like I'm saying, Honorable Madika, it isn't that we have delivered to 300 schools and we have 600 left. What I have indicated is that we will do 600 more than what we are supposed to do. This is what I was trying to say to you, in essence, that we will do 600 more. I said we will, by the end of the financial year, have done close to 600 more, because you can ask the CFO, we agreed at the management committee that in light of the target of the president, 6,004, we need to push it now at the end of the financial year, but also immediately in April, begin to make a huge dent on it, because we will have April and January next year to meet the 6,004. So I think that's the way we had pledged to distribute the money correctly. The issue of how do we ensure that this equipment reaches the intended beneficiaries, honestly, we give this to schools, and the schools are selected on a criterion. First and foremost is that they must be registered for the school sport league. So if you are not registered, you will not get the equipment. And secondly, those schools are syndicated on the basis of whether they are playing and they are participating. And so on that basis, then the schools are forced to give their children the attire so they can participate and the equipment so they can play and practice. So from that point of view, we are quite happy. And we also do provincial monitoring visits to go see, and we also do a random questionnaire. And right now, with the use of the portfolio of evidence by the AG, we are also forced that the principals must sign for the equipment and also put a school stamp that they have received it. So in that way, we are able to prove that the equipment actually reached the school and the principal has signed for it in that way. The issue of talent, scout versus science, so first maybe let me respond that, yes, we give schools according to the request and according to the list of needs. We're not going to give a school that's not playing rugby equipment and that they play with it or they just store it in the storeroom. But schools, when they register, they also indicate on the registration form what codes they intend to participate in. Yes, I must admit there is a disjunction now between those that get registered and ultimately the codes they eventually play. Because a teacher may register the school and say, I want to play under 17 football and under 17 girls football and also netball, but I also want to play basketball. But ultimately, you provide them with equipment for this and then they don't play basketball ultimately. So that disjuncture is there in some areas, but wherever we find it and we find that equipment has been stored in school and children are not playing on a monitoring visit, because we not only interview the teachers, we also ask the learners to say, are you playing? And when, how often do you play? Where, who's your coach? And all of those type of things. But essentially, the key issue for us is that where the equipment is kept, we reallocate it to the schools that need it the most. So that's what we do. The issue of talent scouts and science, talent scouting is in itself not a science. It's a very subjective thing. A scout who stands there, I may, while I'm watching, I mean, I can ask, I can do a quick scan in the room and say, Honorable Ralokoma, who's your favorite Bafana player? But I'm sure that will be very different from what Honorable Malazu will say, because when they are looking at those players, they see different traits and see different things that impresses them and believe that this is the most talented player. But that's human nature, subjective. And so in order to counterbalance that, at any match, we get three talent scouts to stand by the side and watch the children play. And each of those scouts must score a child 70 and above to say that this child is talented. So even if two scouts score you 70, but one score you 35 or 50 or whatever, you are not selected. So, but that's not an exact science either. Because how many of the coaches buy players, and when the players come into the fold of that team, they don't perform, or they underperform, or one reason or the other. That's really not the perfect science. The perfect science is in looking at the proportion. The good way of telling this story is with jockeys in horse racing. There's a type of a person called the little big man. So they measure children at school to see their bone structure and density and to look at how tall they are. And they make and plot a chart and say, we know a child who has a circumference of a head like this will end up with a head like this at the age of 35. And by the time he reaches 36, then the progression of growth is finalized. You just age now. So you no longer can stretch or go bigger than what you are. So on the basis of that, if by this age 8, you measure like this, you will end up as a little big man. So meaning that you will be just the right height to match with the horse, and otherwise you break your bones, you fall, you do all sorts of things. You just can't handle that horse. But you have to be a little big man for you to be there. So there is science in sports, and it is a reality. Also, if you are an athlete and you are supposed to run a sub 10, meaning the best time to be a sprinter, you are supposed to run sub 10 seconds in 100 meters. The metabolism of our bodies is not the same. We have to look, we have to do an ECG test on you and see how quickly does your heart pump and how many pumps does it give and what is your blood pressure at that high speed. And we want to also see how quickly does your body oxygenate your muscles. All of this is science. It will tell us whether you would compete with the best in the world or not. And that's not fluke. It's not that eye on the side of the field. It can only reconfirm what we have seen. But science is also different in sports, because if you are a chess player and you play, you can beat your companions. But it may be that the people who have matched you with on the day are themselves weaker in IQ from you. That makes you look like a star, but in essence you are not. Because we have to look at your thinking process and your how you process decisions and how quick you make split-second decisions. And we have to compare you with the IQ of grandmasters of chess we know. Many of them, Kasparov and what, their thinking process has already been mapped. It has been reduced into board games and into IQ tests. So when we test you specifically in chess, we want to see how well you think like the grandmasters and how well your thinking process helps you make those split-second decisions, because in real chess, it's not the chess father and son play at home over whiskey. You play against time, and the split seconds are important to be made immediately, whether I'm going to move the queen to this, to E3 or not, and so on. And all of this is tested. So all I'm saying is that it isn't a fluke thing. It is well established. All the sports science institutes will tell you, from SUSPI at Stellenbosch to High Performance Center, the University of Pretoria, everywhere you go, and at our National Training Center where we train these kids and we assess them, we look at their competencies according to their chosen sport. So, and necessarily it will be unfair to take a bodybuilder or a weightlifter and give them that IQ test of chess. Then it's a mismatch. But certainly we have to look at the right test for the right type of code and say this is the right one that we must apply. So lastly from me would be the issue of the centralized tender. We have centralized it now. We have issued the price index, and all provinces are expected to comply with that. Right now it is centralized in the sense that we have appointed a common database of service providers and allocated them to provinces. But the provinces still procure. But they know that when I'm going to buy a ball, this ball, I'm going to buy it for so much, 180 rand, and so on. And this we did because earlier, you would remember that some provinces were buying a ball worth 180 rand, or 380 stitches. They were buying it for about 450, 600 rand. So we just couldn't allow that situation to go on. So working with the Treasury, we had to insist on a common template and everybody to buy. I think now the biggest differentiator and the biggest challenge has been to match the service providers that won the tender to the provinces. And it had had unintended consequences that some service providers based far away, they now have to deliver goods and services far away, and the transport cost was what was unforeseen. But we are learning. And now we have already been decided in our management committee that the next time we will impose that the service providers appointed to those provinces must be willing to have a warehouse in the province concerned and employ people in that province and also distribute from that point of view. So, but I think that will be a new condition after the initial 3 year cycle. So we are getting there, but we have to start somewhere. I think it has to be understood in context that we have to start somewhere and regulate what was happening. I'll leave the issue of the filling of vacancies to Ms. Luvanga, and the issue of spending by provinces to the CFO, as well as the issue of the penalties to the CFO. I would just want to address the issue of the review on the MIG. Look, honestly, we are struggling with this issue of MIG, Honorable Ralokhuma. I think that the Treasury is not giving us the type of support it should on this matter. While on paper they say they agree with us in meetings and everywhere, but we are not getting to a point where they have to gather this thing. If they really wanted to help us, they would have long gathered this thing that the 15% be consolidated into a grant. They have had to subject us to a long, tedious process by cooperative governance, which in essence the six proposals cooperative governance has put to the table had totally ignored our proposal that make this one grant. They have proposed all and sundry, including ridiculous things that says that we must participate in each and every IDP of the municipality. If I was to attempt to do that, I'll have to hire about 200 people just to
study the IDPs of each and every municipality and go try influence the municipality to provide for sports facilities in those I mean, it is just totally impractical. So we have rejected all the 6 proposals, returned our standing proposal that says merge this thing. So we are hoping that with the support of the portfolio committee, we may be able to get somewhere. But right now, we are at a point where it's a stalemate, and no one is moving, and we have put our proposals on the table. They asked us to cause this thing. They asked us for a proposal on how we're going to spend the money to demonstrate our capacity that we can spend that money, but ultimately we were just ignored.
Before that, I'm still sharing. Thank you, DG. I do have some maybe related questions. I'm worried about what Sasco promised us. I'm reporting to you that they will take care of Luvo case, that they will be taking him back for training this year. Luvo Manyong, the president of SASCOC, but they've written to us, wanted to, that we must call them, but we waited because they wanted to come and give us on the beat. But we wanted firstly that the department must do what we've just done. Also, who's the director of rural development program in your department? I'll get that. With this moment, welcome, Minister. We've reported when we started the meeting that you will join us because of some things that happened to the nation. You're supposed to start somewhere. So we're even worried whether we'll be released before the end of the meeting. We decided not to start with the first briefing of your good self, whilst we were told that UDM is here on your behalf. But because you wanted to come in the meeting and then you have been tasked early this morning, welcome to the committee. We are doing well with the office led by our deputy minister. And now we are coming whilst we are at the end of the clarities on the questions. So far, UDG is doing well. I'll hear from the members if they want the follow-up. Welcome again in our committee. You can proceed, colleagues.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable members. As you'll be aware, the issue of transfer to provinces is done in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, abbreviated as DORA. And it has always come with a lot of challenges that provinces are giving to national department. And it's not only sports and recreation. If you go to a DORA workshop, all the national department are complaining about reporting from provinces. So as a result, I like one of the members this morning said, the department must stop lamenting and come up with action. And in terms of that, our department has introduced a new policy which we call schedule of penalties to provinces. And we have discussed this approach with the National Treasurer to say, look, we are got challenges with provinces that are not conforming to the DORA regulation and also to the grant framework. And in order for us to make them to enforce compliance, we need to come up with a penalties that will enforce compliance so that we stop lamenting. So last week as we were sitting here, we had a management meeting where the draft schedule of penalties was presented to management and it was approved. What will be the effect of this? Maybe that is the question we should be telling the members. Is that when a province is not, every quarter we are supposed to process a transfer, But before we process the transfer, there is a checklist of requirements that we need to check in terms of compliance. If we cannot tick all the boxes, then that province will forfeit its transfer for the time being. But immediately, a penalty kicks in that if you did not comply, 5% of that quota transfer, it will be held back. So if you continue with the non-compliance, the 5% will accumulate until it becomes 100%. So upon the provinces to make sure that they comply with the requirements. If they don't comply, they stand a chance of losing their transfer. And I think with that approach, it's going to make them tick, because currently the accounting officer got the power to withhold for 90 days. But I'm telling you, after 30 days of withholding, the provincial treasuries are on our case to say, guys, we didn't transfer the money to our province. But then we tell them, your province is not compliant, so we will not be transferring. You can see how much they need the money. But in terms of them showing if their performance is a challenge for me, for most of the province. So in terms of this policy, we're implementing it in a way that we want to enforce compliance on the provinces. Secondly, related to this, of course, is the spending by provinces. On the 20th of each month, we receive reports from provinces in terms of their expenditure and budget reports. And as we are sitting here in the 12th month of the year, by the 20th, we'll receive the report of up to end of February. Just to indicate to members is that at least by the report of January, which we received last month in February, it shows that most of the department were, you know, even Northwest, which received their money late, is very surprising that they're almost sitting at 80%, which means after they received their money, they already signed the checks and sent to their creditors and so on. But in terms of spending, the provinces are in line with our projection, and they will spend the almost 90% of their allocation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, honourable Minister Sekilambalula, and honourable Deputy Minister Hester Steven, and the DJ and colleagues. Good morning. I'll be addressing the question asked by Honourable Strike about the filling of vacancies within the department. Maybe before I respond, just to bring context into the department in as far as the post concerned. We are in our organizational structure having 209 posts, and this is an approved organizational structure that we are currently working on as a department. And currently we are sitting at the 52 vacant positions, which when you calculate it in terms of percentages, it gives you a 24.88%. And these positions, if maybe I can indicate, we have advertised 31 positions, which the closing date was the 17th of November 2014. And some of these positions, let me indicate to say, we started with the selection process for these positions. And whilst we're still in the selection process, some of the positions then became vacant. You must remember that there are colleagues who are looking for promotions as well as we are growing, people looking at growing. So we had other vacancies that happened in the process whilst we're still filling the other vacancies that closed in November, which we've advertised about 18 of those, which closed, their closing date was in 23rd of February 2015 this year. I must indicate that currently we have positions actually that most of positions have been interviewed for, which were vacant in the department for those that have closed in the 17th of November 2014, and some of the ones that they closed in the 23rd of February. Recommendations have been made by panel members for most positions that are in the levels below the director ones, that is below level 13. Those recommendations, panel members, have been made for the appointment of those candidates by the Director General. However, the ones that are above the level 12, that is your level 13 and above,
that we have made recommendations, panel members have made recommendations for appointment. However, they still had to go through a competence assessment, which is a requirement by the DPSA that we all are aware of. And the minister then will make an appointment of those positions immediately the competency results are coming back, came back. And really to give a progress as per the previous report that we have given to the portfolio committee when we hear about the filling of vacancies, we can indicate that we have so far made appointments of 20 new appointments, 20 from external. This is the recruitment that we have done currently as a department. And in also in this recruitment drive, we have also promoted 4 officials internally. Remember, the recruitment now, we opened it externally and internally because we were starting by advertising internally, which is another thing that has taken time off the department. However, we have realized that we will be in a permanent recruiting cycle because if we are only recruiting internally, then those positions become vacant and it took a lot of time. It was really time consuming. So we decided as a department that we will open externally and internally, so all these people must apply. Then in that process, then we promoted currently 4 officials, which their positions now become vacant as well, which we still need to fill. And we can safely say in a nutshell, we have, out of the 52 vacant positions that we had, we have filled 24 posts currently, and we have 28 that we still need to fill, and we have terminations of 6. So the department is really doing well in trying to fill in the vacant positions that we have, and also we have set a deadline for ourselves as a department to say by the 31st of March, this process should have been finalized. So we're hoping by the end, beginning of the financial year, we would have completed with the process.
Please. Yes, I think what the Chief Audit Executive has not indicated is that 18 of the remaining 28 will not be filled because we have taken 18 posts additional to the establishment, meaning that we have prioritized some posts and funded those specific posts on the new organogram with funding from existing posts. So you would see those posts will remain sort of permanently vacant. But when you count the headcount, you'll see that we'll end up at 209 anyway. So because we've got 18 others on the sidelines, positions like graphic designer and what are not on our old structure, on the approved structure, but they appear on the new one. And in the bargaining chamber, when we discussed with the unions, they agreed that the prioritized posts can be filled now. And DPSA also agreed that we can do that. So when you do that, it will reduce really our outstanding vacancy rate to about 10 posts, which we will finish in no time.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm suspecting that the only thing that as this committee has been saying that you are supporting the department on the meet in whatever meetings that you are sitting. We do sit even in the social transformation cluster. Those departments whom we are sitting with, they are supporting this thing of IMIC. But the fortunate part of it, we've invited USALCA in this meeting. And after the engagement with Ujin, who's an executive director for municipality infrastructure, when they were taking us through, I had a session aside with her. Seemingly, she is sitting in some of the meetings where this thing is being discussed. And the reality is that when DG is saying that the department needs our support in whatever ways, I've discovered that she shared something with me that if we can do ABC, because it's sitting in those meetings where we are presenting as department with the Minister of Finance, this committee once want to be radical. We said it must wait for the minister and to come and and report back to us. They were saying if it comes to a push, they need a meeting with the Minister of Finance. And as I'm sitting here, that information that I got from Udin, she said something that we need to emphasize, and we must be firm. I'll tell you, committee, in one another meeting. We are taking this thing very serious because we don't have enough budget as this department, and it's not yet increased, but one of part of our body is given to the people that they don't take care of this infrastructure, and we don't know why Ukopta is not seeing what we are seeing. We'll make them see it very soon. We are promising that we'll do that. If there's no other thing, a follow-up, I've seen Honorable Malazi, Honorable Jafta, and then who else? Honorable Matadie. Okay, on that order.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to start by welcoming the introduction of that schedule of penalties. I think it's long overdue, and it will just, for us, I think the key thing is when we hold you accountable, we want to hold you accountable on your actions, not on the inaction of other people. And this is a step in the right direction. I just have a query regarding the allocation of the ministerial bursary for these sports bursaries that are awarded, that perhaps maybe the idea would be to move them far earlier rather than hold them at the end of the year. That would give you enough time to do the testing so that you have not selected people and all of a sudden you have to pull them back. Because for the beneficiaries, if you have to do that, it will be traumatic, and any right-thinking parent will put in a good fight to let their children remain on that. But I've got serious concerns about once we have then identified and allocated the bursaries and find that, you know, we have been cheated in a way, that we then redirect them to, and I'm not sure if I got you clear. So when you say we find that there are alternatives, you mean alternative in other sports, but not on the basis of the bursary. Sorry, Chair, I just need that clarity before I proceed, because the rest of my question is based on that, so I don't want to go on a tangent.
Yes, what we're saying is children who cheat, and we found that they cheated and they got a bursary, that's outright termination. There's no doubt about that. We're saying the children who didn't cheat but were identified by the scouts as talented, but then we now have discovered scientifically that they are actually not so talented, then those children were saying, can't we offer them a second chance in other courts to look at whether they can have any competencies there?
The second one is with regard to the determination of medals going into Commonwealth Games and Olympics, and I think it's quite interesting, and it's a move that I welcome. I don't think like a sports body should actually have the right to determine and impose, you know, on the political leadership what the numbers of medals should be, because the priorities might not sync. But the other interesting feature of that is previously there's been a lot of intra-federation fights because SASCO would impose on specific federation the number of medals. And just last week we had that instance with Sanabo, who just put the comment that we need one medal from you guys on the basis that our priorities, and then set the condition of qualification, which means that in a country that has so many aspirant boxers, you put the condition that you need one medal, we might just as well send in three boxers. So the other potentials are then track of the group. But, you know, I don't want to spark any intra-conflict on anything, but the key thing is maybe the sentiment is a little delayed, because towards the end of last year, SASCO came to the committee and made an inference to 10 medals in the upcoming Olympic Games. So I just want to throw that at you as to whether that was done in prior to the discussions that happened, or the that was a bit ambitious and preemptive on their part, but also to establish what would then be the terms of determination of what are our goals. Is this through individual federations making submissions and then, you know, the department or at ministry level or at DG level making the determination in terms of, one, vis-a-vis the allocation of our resources, vis-a-vis the ambitions of the individual federations and the reality of the level of competitiveness in those individual sporting codes. So that, you know, we don't want to use figures recklessly, but when figures are thrown around, that becomes the baseline of what we measure our accountability on. So if you can shed some light if there is any on.
Honourable members, I'm trying to manage the time. We must try to be brief to the point when you're doing follow-up questions. We'll be taking the time for a minister. Once it's important that you must do follow-up, try to be short and brief to the point. Another follow-up question. Yes, it's you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Just one question that I don't think was sufficiently answered. Is that all the equipment that was not delivered to the schools? I didn't quite get your answer to that. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. In any case, I've been away from this COVID
Deputy Chair.
Yeah.
Of the committee, you nominated yourself to be deputy chair, but you have got about 2 months not seeing you. But I know that we are sitting to so many committees, and by nominating yourself, you were appreciating that you like sport. We do get apologies.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Chairperson. At least my voice now will be remembered and again recognize the deputy chair. This is just a comment and a concern. You know, Chairperson, what is the DG saying that the target on the audit of the sport facilities is not going to be achieved in any way? It's a little bit worried to me because I always have a problem with these local municipalities. You know, during these IDPs, there are certain amounts that are put aside for this target, sports facilities, but such an amount is never used. So if this gets attended to as quickly as possible, that would be good for me. I know that you say you can't now, but now it should be made a priority so that you check on these municipalities. Thank you very much. I don't want to be long. I've been away for so long, so I should not be long. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Jaiza. Titi.
Chair, I'll answer briefly. Honorable Malazi, then, if SASCOC says, in addition to the 8 medals we say they must provide, they would provide additional 2, I think we must be happy and accept their offer. The only thing we must be worried is if they say they'll only deliver 7. So, but this far, our determination of how the medals must be allocated, we subscribe to a global sports distribution agency called SportCall, which on a daily basis sends us performances and everything globally. Now, you get articles on the major competitions, everything, including the competitions on our schedule or calendar of participation. So we would know what time an athlete has clocked, how fast the swimmer has swimmed, every other thing. And you actually can use the spot call information on each athlete to track them. And you can also look at what the competitors of those athletes do and plot them on a graph over a number of competitions. Obviously, performance of athletes changes from time to time, but you have to look and have a fair longitudinal view of the type of performances these athletes have given. So on that basis, you can determine fairly, unless you have surprise packages, you know, because at the Beijing Olympics, it was the first time we saw those Chinese swimmers. By London, they were very dominant in the pool. So
Even in the Commonwealth Games, you saw that that boy, Michael Piat, has eclipsed Cameron unexpectedly. But give or take, if you are hoping for a gold medal and you end up with a silver, it's still a medal. And that is why we are not saying five goals or what we say medals from that point of view. And I think that's how the determination is made. Then the issue of the equipment that has not been delivered to schools. I thought I had answered this. I indicated that the equipment in December, we had not purchased it, but we knew that we had to purchase it in January for delivery when the school returns. And I have also indicated that we had given the 300 already to meet the target, and we will also deliver almost 600 more of that. Honorable Jaisa, the issue of the target for facilities audit, yes, I think this also Honorable Malasi addressed, and I have erroneously not responded to. We now know that we cannot deliver on the target this year. It's the only target we would not meet this financial year. However, we had already, it's already back into my performance agreement. The minister has put it back to say this nine facilities audit must be completed. We have set up a committee of management that's going to look into supporting the outstanding provinces. There's about three provinces that have not started at all. And the key issue we know is lack of capacity by the provinces, who also are dependent on the municipalities to do the audit. The difficulty with this exercise is the nature of the information that it requires. I can tell you about the grading and classification framework, but the trainer-trainer program of people who now must go and do the actual audit, when they are looking at that facility, if they say to us it's a level 3 facility, meanwhile it's a level 2, I think then we have a problem, because by determining by the norms and standards, we would know that a level 2 facility is a municipal cluster, and it means that it will have 7,500 seats or more. It means that it will have so many blocks of ablution facilities. It will have the following, a minimum of 6 codes, and so on and so forth. So all of this type of things are what the person who has that questionnaire must look at the facility and at once seek it. And also the condition report on the facility also has got to be looked at and ticked properly. And that information, all these many forms that are coming back from municipalities to provinces to us, including the requirement now that we are making, that says that we want GPS coordinates of the facility, we want to know the correct address of the facility, we want the picture of the facility, we want all of this. It is quite difficult for municipalities to meet this, and provinces have struggled themselves to have this. Only the two provinces that have managed to complete this is KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. And we had began this financial year to help Limpopo, Gauteng, and Mpumalanga to start. But the other provinces have not started at all. And we have to help them start. And the team management as appointed will be dispatched to provinces to help them start. And we will start by training the officials at municipalities that must actually do the audit to know when they go out what they actually must do. But practically, we still need a system that will now analyze the data. I think this is where the issue of money comes in, because with so many forms that are going to come back, I'm sure members are hoping that we will not sit and count and say how many level 2s are there, 1, 2, will never finish, you know. So you need people, data capturers that are going to come on a similar system like the template, capture the data onto a system, and then disaggregate the data. And then it will tell us, it will plot for us everything that needs to be done. It is that system that is very expensive, and more so because our requirement is that it be GIS linked, meaning that you will, on air or by air, cloud, enter, login anywhere in the country at any municipality, and you can punch into that system and see. And if you say George Tavis Stadium, and then it will come out. Or you can say give me facilities that can cater for 500 people for the sport of cricket, né, in this vicinity. And then it must return the results for you. And so you, it must be interactive and user-friendly. So that, and if you say, now I want to see where this is located, and then you can zoom in by Google Map up until you zoom to the facility, look at it, it can give you a fact sheet of the facility and every other thing. GCIS has plotted, not GCIS, CSIR has plotted everything about that system, has done the entries. Actually now, the two provinces, we're using the same form that we need for that, but obviously the money is not there. To that 47 million is just prohibitive. We simply can't afford it. So, but like Honorable Malatsi has said, I've said to him, we have gone to the drawing board, and the management committee has been tasked with the responsibility of finding a solution for us, because either way, this target, I must meet it again in April now, and I will have to grapple with it to achieve it.
DJ, let's come to an end of your presentation and discussion and clarities, hoping that next month when we are coming for your strat plan and for your APP, we'll meet you then. But we are not releasing you, of course, Minister is still here. Mawuchola, Honorable Minister, this is your term. 3.1 is what we have shifted. Thank you. Or maybe according to our understanding, the 3.1 is saying Minister of Sports and Recreation, and the feedback on discussion at MINMEC with regard to provinces funding for sport, provinces accountability for funding and updates on football, match fixing, Eyathandwakhe Ndofika matter, and the negotiations with National Treasury on funding of approved mandates. And so we want to close the chapter. You know that you went back and you were going to meet them, and the committee asked that they want you to come and tell what did you get found. So that's the only thing that today we have called you for, and appreciating that you have put aside all your commitments, that today we are with us. And as a chairperson, I did tell the committee that you are not a member of the committee. When they need you, they must ask, and will liaise with your office. We are not expecting you to that every day must come and sit here. You are an executive member that you have other duties to perform. But immediately that members are feeling that they need you, I'll facilitate that, and we do appreciate that you must know when we ask, we are compelled to come, but if you do have a problem, you tell us. We do appreciate that today we are with us because of the current call of the committee. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair of the Portfolio Committee, and colleagues and honorable members, for the opportunity to appear, and myself as the Deputy Minister and the department. And I hope that the DG and his team helped you to clarify and even by that reinforce what needs to be done going forward. And I think for us to appear before the committee, there's no question. It's part of our program of action. It's just a question of time. We don't want the question of appearing here. It must be a big discussion. It has never been. It will never be. So every time you want us, we will be there. But sometime, with due respect, if the minister will not be available, I mean, because of unforeseen circumstances, please don't help back, because it will delay what you are supposed to ask us in the committee. If the deputy minister is available, it should actually be allowed to take the stage. I know that the difficulty with the committee with regard to that is that ministers run away and then all the time give the deputies the opportunity to come and answer questions. And I think that is not the spirit, and it should really be something fundamental that will prohibit the minister not to appear. But we are a team, and what I say, the deputy minister can say in my absence. Thank you for the opportunity. Chair, with regard to the issue of the provinces, at the political level, we have raised this matter with our colleagues because you will realize that not all provinces allocate resources for sports, and the MECs will not insist on that. And from our MINBEC onwards, we have actually said that the coming budgets in the provinces that will be tabled must reflect on the sports in the different provinces. Otherwise, sports just become a luxury, a nice to have. And they all depend on DORA and so on, but they wouldn't insist that provinces, treasury in the provinces would actually allocate money for sport in the different provinces. So we are one with regard to that, and I hope I will see the results in the new financial year and going forward. And I think some provinces like Gauteng do without fail allocate resources to sports, among others. But if MECs are just going to be there and would not impress at the level of the executive and the provinces, we will not be in a position to get this done. Secondly, with regard to match fixing, I wrote to Jerome Valk immediately after our meeting last time. He told me that I must consult some guy in New York City. Yeah. And then Safa requested me that we can fly there. I said, no, I'm happy to go to New York every weekend, but not on taxpayers' money again, you know, to go and listen to that lawyer, prolific lawyer, so to say. I'm a very dangerous guy who's based in New York investigating match fixing, you know, all over the world. You know, I want to be honest with you. These guys, when I went to Zurich and we came back to investigate, this thing will be done by now. If really we're one with SAFA, get done with this thing first before FIFA, ourselves. I went to the president, I reported to you. In the middle of going to the president, they fiddled with what we agreed upon. They suspected that I wanted to investigate other issues other than match fixing. So I said, no, I'm not going to investigate anything other than what we agreed upon. I don't know where they got their information in terms of their intelligence that probably the body that will come back with different, you know, I explain that. But as government, we advise the president that, look, we can't go ahead with this thing because these people, in terms of the law, they will actually take us on. And rather, let's allow their own process to finish. If there's anything out of it that is outstanding, we can then take up the matter. We wrote back to them, the president did, and we gave them an opportunity to ensure that this matter is done. FIFA was informed accordingly, what is our position. Immediately they said that they are appointing Garcia to make a follow-up on this matter and to investigate. Look, he has not done anything. And Jerome Valk has been very arrogant that FIFA is not the headquarters of investigations and all of that. But look, we will not allow that in a way to say that that matter must be left as it is. Because those who are implicated, like Leslie Sidibe, came forward and then wanted to challenge what is happening and so on, and said that they want to clear their names and so on.
that has not actually happened. Now, I think at the end it's going to depend between us and SAFA. I'm going to SAFA, I'm invited to the SAFA AGM, and one of the top issues on the agenda, I think, in the next coming weeks is the question of closing the match fixing matter. But I was in New York recently. I could have gone there and see Garcia, but my schedule was tight because I can't see Garcia on a trip like that and without SAFA being present. And I think that is very important to note. But if you agree, honorable members, you want me to go to New York to see Garcia, you really have to write it down to me this afternoon, Malachi especially, so that I can go. But I'm just saying that we will make a follow-up with this. With SAFA, and we need to make a determination after the AGM what we're going to do. We really want this matter to be closed because it doesn't, because every time in the world they speak about match fixing, South Africa is referred to as one of those countries that have got outstanding matters of match fixing. And we need to attend to this issue and bring a close to this particular matter. Progress made in negotiations with National Treasury. Funding for approved mandates, we met with the minister and my team also in terms of the department have been engaging with the treasury on these issues. And quite clear, you know the financial situation in the world and in the country. I don't think we are going to get any money. We have to live with what we have at the present moment. Even the 1.7 billion that was raised in the budgetary speech, really, it's an over-exaggeration and a distortion. The status quo still remains the same. What we must do, we must fight for what is already there. We must get the MIG grant, that we can. We're engaging even at the cluster meeting of ministers to settle the matter with. I note what the DG said, which is quite correct, to insist that what is allocated to us in black and white must be allocated at the final analysis. I think the budget will increase, I don't know when the financial situation improves, and I don't know when that will be in the world and in the country. And when will sports become a priority? I don't know whether that will ever happen. I think we'll always remain in the middle towards the end, the most important, but you know, I think we can do with what we have if we prioritize and basically know exactly what we want to do. And I think that's what we seek to do in the past 5-6 years of our presence here in the Sports and Recreation Department. There are also other avenues in terms of funding that we need to explore and look at our funding model and so on. That is what is important. But nonetheless, honorable members, I think we have met with the Treasury, we still continue, but we can't resolve the issue of the MIG without COCTA first, and then propose to the National Treasury what needs to happen. But we're not one with regard to that, because also our sister department, Arts and Culture, is party to that, and that is what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. In this committee, after Usalka left us, we took a decision that you will call COPTA to come and hear us what are we saying about the MIG. So we're trying our best. We do understand about the budget and the crisis in international all over, but if you want to achieve this social cohesion, we need not that this committee, it must be, by the way, come 5 years, if we're still here, we will make sure that we don't want that sport, once you said we want social cohesion, that it must be by the way department. It must come to an end, and we'll make sure that we'll show and will work harder as this committee in order that everyone must see that we need a budget, that within no time they will be seeing our plans, that these plans together with our department needs to be taken along like any other department. With those words I will be giving honorable members, but I don't think that we can allow you to take the taxpayers' money because of people who don't want this thing to happen. But you must also advise what measures, but we do hear that you will meet with USAFA, and USAFA, we did call them before we called you. We wanted to hear their side of story, but with immediate effect, SAFA and our department minister, you must tell us what are your plans. We are happy that you also taking this thing very serious, because sometimes when committee members saying that they need answers, sometimes we wanted that they must be aware that answers are not with our minister, are with those people. I don't want to say what kind of them, but they know themselves. With those words, honorable members, this is your time to engage with the report of the minister, which is a very constructive report, especially with this one of his connection, but not with our tax monies, please. Honorable there is a last bone here, honorable members, is harassing me. Please protect me, the last bone of the committee. Honorable Madiga, at least today, honorable Bergman, I didn't hear your voice. Thanks, Minister, that you have come. Honorable Fultan, honorable last bone of the committee. Oh, I'm sorry. It's you before Honorable Sultan, Honorable Malad.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the Honorable Minister. Chairperson, it's like with regards to the issue of the match fixing, there is no progress that is being made there. The last time we met with the Honorable Minister, we were in the same situation to say, as South Africa, we are worried that we want this matter to be laid to rest, but it remains unsolved. Then one wonders as to whose competence it is to deal with matters of this this kind, because we shouldn't be having a structure like FIFA when there are these such serious matters. They will pronounce them and don't seem to be taking them serious. That is why, Honorable Minister, last time I even asked a question as to, are these allegations regarded and taken as serious? Because if they are this serious and there is a body that is responsible for dealing with matters of this kind, we shouldn't be going around like in circles, and we are the country, we are as South Africa and SAFA, we are only concerned. I wonder if, Honorable Minister, there would be a way of, I don't know, because you have indicated that you would want this committee to put it on writing if we want to further engage. But I was thinking of the engagement maybe with President of FIFA, Sepp Blatter himself, because and to find out as to what does he think regarding this matter, because we can't have a matter that will go on and on and on, it's with no ending. I don't know, Honorable Minister, but we are worried because it's like we shall, for the next 5 years, we shall keep on wanting to know about this, and we are the only ones. The body FIFA doesn't care. The secretary does not do anything, and to be sending you up and down also. If there is no willingness on their side, it's not going to help us. But we are worried. That is the fact of the matter, that we don't want our country to be known as a bad country when we want to be known as a good sporting nation. Thank you.
Honourable Bachmann.
Honourable Minister, thank you, and Chair. I think the mention of America, you've opened yourself up to certain questions about costs of life and who's paying for it. It won't come from our mouth. I just wanted to find out, with regards to the match fixing, just to follow up on the point. I mean, FIFA are concerned, but so are we. And last time we did mention that the reason why, after you had called the President to investigate, and there was a silence, that FIFA had given us an undertaking. Today we hear that FIFA is actually concerned that we might be investigating something on their behalf, and you know, that is a slight concern, because then it sounds like their covers are locked very tightly, but all of ours are open for everyone to see. Now, somewhere along the line, I'm not even sure whether it's maybe something worth lobbying with the rest of the football associations to try and force, and I understand that FIFA is a fiefdom of their own, but to try and force a collaborative effort amongst all the football associations to get some form of clarity. We run a reputational risk here, but it's not just the country that faces reputational risk. There's certain individuals within the sports, obviously, that we need to protect, or we need to prosecute, whichever way we fall on that sword. So I do say that the minister's trying. I just would like to just put another box on his shoulders and just say that somewhere along the line, maybe the next mandate is, before going to New York, is lobbying the views of all the different football associations and seeing what we can come to. In terms of the Commonwealth Games, the Director General has given us some clarity on how we maybe got, you know, how the costs were covered in the press, etc., etc. You've mentioned the MIC grants. Now for us, a city like Durban, Asikweni, stands to benefit possibly in the MIC funding now, more so because of the odds that Durban might host the Commonwealth Games. Is there a sense of fairness, or how do we counter that, you know, instead of getting a whole line of cities now wanting to put their hands up to host the Commonwealth Games because they know that they're going to get a boost of funding? How do we counter that? How do we ensure still equity amongst all the other provinces so that we don't have a situation where one city, because their province benefits because of that city's hosting of a major sports event, but everyone else is then handicapped and retarded in forms of growth and development? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Look, I think with I welcome the minister's update on that, and I think the sentiment from that and anyone who has tracked the developments with FIFA is that it's an obstructive monster that, you know, cooperates when it's convenient to them and does not cooperate when it's not convenient to them. And maybe perhaps in recognition of that, it requires a change of tactics, you know, and that would be within the realm of the minister's powers, which is a ministerial inquiry, which does not have the same consequences as a judicial commission of inquiry. But what it would do is it will provide some certainty into issues that are immediately resolvable within the ambit of the minister's powers. Because if we were to wait for FIFA to finalize the investigation, it might be a long wait that, you know, would exceed our lifetime. You know, Michael Garcia's resignation has also been a destabilizing factor that's conveniently used by FIFA. And given the prolonged level of interaction, this hasn't come up now. I mean, the minister has been in interaction with FIFA as early as 2011 at the initial stages of that. And, you know, there's been dodges. It's quite clear now that based on the precedent of the nature of their responses, there is either deliberate dodging or they do not share the same sense of agency and priority that we do given this matter. So maybe it's the time for the minister to consider, you know, the institution of a ministerial inquiry, which of course does not, you know, have subpoena powers like a presidential judicial of inquiry, but what it will do is, within the ambit of what the minister can do, there's something that can be done in that, and whether the minister can consider that as a way of carefully and thoroughly expediting this process and clearing this cloud of uncertainty that hangs over, you know, the images of and the integrity of people who are part of the administration of sport on this country. Because I don't believe that, you know, FIFA would align their priorities with us, because they are quite different. You know, their next big worry is where the next World Cup is going to be. So maybe the minister must use what is within his powers to resolve this case in a way that does not compromise that process. Nothing, you know, people will try political interference, but political interference can only be attributed when, you know, it involves them. If they refuse to be part of a process that clears a local organization, the argument about political interference truly can't hold water, and there's a precedent for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. We welcome the brief report. It's quite enlightening and also scary in some respect, I must admit. On this, fixing the Minister, my approach may very well be slightly different from everybody else's for certain reasons. I would say perhaps after your meeting with FIFA, it may be prudent for you, for the sake of the image of the department that you had, it may be prudent for you to make a public statement in the media to declare your position in the matter after doing so much work. The other alternative would be for you to consider the advisability or otherwise of taking the legal route, where you feel that there's been some transgression of either South African laws or international laws. We do have the International Court of Justice in this land, that is, as a world. If it's a matter that affects or can be investigated by the local police, let's have the process starting. Because we don't want a cloud capping on hanging over your department. It's not helping the sport enthusiasts of this country or an entity of yours within your ambit. So it would either be the local police or the International Court of Justice. The reason I'm suggesting that is because I'm concerned about the potential ongoing endless, you know, reputation, which definitely probably has a negative impact on potential sponsors of sports. You'll find that previously, exclusively white schools, in a number of cases, they would have local businesses that on and ongoing support them. And but previously, you know, where typically African schools would not have so many people who are supporting their sports. Messages may support a cell phone with a bus, and so they are disadvantaged. Cell phone rugby clubs, rugby players. But you'll find that a school like mine in Changa Barawa, they have got no one to support them. But now, if we have got a department that demonstrates that it does not tolerate, you know, activities of this nature, it may not be so difficult to address funding. Now, that also covers my comments when it comes to funding. Maybe a strong message, positive, of course, you know, to the private sector to indicate that the relevance and the importance of a department that wants to engage with them, you know, to partner with them, you know, on terms that would favor them, like exposing their products and that kind of thing. Then, you know, we're from region to region. Maybe we may start off by piloting in a certain area to see what impact this is going to have. And it might help, because for me, sport is not just sport in the normal sense. there are many implications. I'm not here to lecture to you. You probably know more than I do, you know, about it. But I'm convinced that there is absolutely no reason why anyone who knows sport for what it can be to a country to look down upon it. There is no reason. It's simply because, Honorable Minister, someone somewhere in the country or some people in the country do not quite understand the broad effects on the positive side of sport. That's the only reason. So that's part of the programs that need to be funded coming, you know, let's say we can't do it this coming financially, that other year, would be to change our strategy and try to focus on advocacy more than running little programs here and there without much impact. You might want to think along those lines. We need you, on a closing note, I'll say as a committee, we would love to have you around when your entities come to account on expenditure. That is the most frequent, simplest way in which we would feel that executive does give itself an opportunity to account to us. It should not be strictly on invitation, but whenever the program shows that an entity that you have funded with public funds is going to be accounting, either you or the deputy, because there could very well be a time when you plan trips around the country, but if you know that on a certain date there's going to be an entity that's going to be accounting, and perhaps the chairperson, you know, would be able to indicate well in time that on such and such a date we're hosting such and such an entity and they'll be accounting for fun. It gives us absolute pleasure to have that opportunity of talking with you or with the deputy. Thank you very much.
Honorable Manan, but honorable member, you must not chip in things that were discussed and not agreed upon now because the minister is here. Don't do that. Because we don't want to reopen on what was decided as a committee. It must not like when the public hearings or oversight on the provinces, the people will say, we'll never see them, because they are seeing us now. I won't allow that. And I would love that you must not do that. Because some of the things we've discussed and agreed as a committee that it must go ABC. Don't do that. Because we're all here when we discuss some part of what now we are raising with the minister. We have a decision on some other things that now we are raising. I'm not talking about image fixing. I'm talking about the things that we discuss every day in the committee. I'm still chairing, I'm still the chairperson, and I've recorded what we've decided on some issues that I don't want to raise as if I want to crush whoever, but refrain from doing that. Because it will make me that I must reopen and tell you what decision we've taken as a committee. Honorable Manan.
Thank you, Chairperson. First thing, Chairperson, before I get into to the minister's point that he has been raised in our presentation, Chairperson, I will disagree with my colleague. He is my colleague. He is even sitting next to me. I'm not agree on what he's saying now. Because we have the accounting officer in this portfolio committee, which
is the chair. Let me inform the meeting chair that I have actually written a letter to
I'm
the minister
chairing
on this
meeting.
Matter. I've got it, and then the minister will respond.
Honourable member, this is not the chamber. This is the committee, and I cannot allow you to do that. This is the second time.
I'll allow Honorable Manana to comment on this. I respected your comment, but if you allow her to comment, then you're opening it up.
Honorable member, did I give you the chance to speak? Honorable Fridan, this is not the plenary where you are doing this thing, comrades or members. I can take actions on what you are doing. You are out of order. I didn't give you. You must listen and after Umanana has raised whatever that you are not yet even hearing what is she saying, and you will be pointing out that the chairperson, I'm not happy about ABC. That's the procedure of the meeting. But you are coming with foreign things in the committee.
you don't want to behave, and this is the second time, and I cannot tolerate. This is a committee who's supposed to discuss how do we assist people. It's not like in that chamber that horrible things are happening. I cannot allow you again. Please, I cannot allow you again. We are the elderly member of society, and in the committee, you are amongst those who are senior. But you are behaving like this. I cannot take it again. I must give you that assurance. Not again, not in the committee that I'm sharing. No one must do what you are doing. Honorable Manana, you must not be afraid of contributing. And everyone who want to object, he will or she will wait until that person finish, and then you must raise your hand, and don't do it again.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I was saying, Lassie, we do have an accounting officer in this committee, which is the DG. Since we are doing some oversight, which if we have some findings, even if we can go to any provinces, we do have the accounting officer with it, which is the HOD on that province. So in short, I'm trying to tell Chairperson, I'm disagreeing when he says that the minister must come here always, and the minister has got other commitments which has been delegated to. The minister, the match fixing thing, as you have already presented to us, I doubt that even Marsha Guy with Marsha Gasha, they don't even agree to each other with the general secretary for FIFA. And we cannot compromise our minister to go to that unknown guy. Not at all. We're not going to allow him to go to that unknown guy. As he has already mentioned, that we will still have some other outcomes or whatever that he's going to bring on our table. They are going to meet with the staffer. Minister, I just want to ask you that you will be waiting for those maybe outcomes that you're going to bring them from SAFA AGM. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Strike and the Whip of the Committee.
No, Chair, I think Honourable Manana has covered me, because my take really is that we can't fight certain wars that are not ours. We must perfect what we are supposed to do as the committee. To just take you in our last meeting, you will remember that we met with SONAVO. SONAVO, already there are certain fights that their international bodies have with other international bodies at the international level. And my take really is that FIFA is an international body that is responsible for soccer, and it behaves like the minister did and came when the minister was briefing us here. That sometimes they behave like more than president of the country, wherever they go. I think Honorable Malachi also touched on that. So we both SONAVO, the international body, and FIFA, they are the same. Once you begin wanting to interfere, they'll say no, we'll ban you from competing internationally. So we need to be very, very careful. That is why my take really is that the body that we need to zoom in is what correctly the minister has indicated, that no, let's take this board to SAFA, because SAFA is responsible. And that is the point that I was making with SONAVO, that you see, our international bodies must also get involved in the transformation of these bodies, so that these bodies must not remain the same as they were some 20 years ago. And expect that we'll keep quiet. But our entry point really is that they, let's zoom in on SAFA. The minister has already indicated that now I'm going to engage with SAFA. And then we'll determine the next call of action led by the minister. If we can want to do it any other way, I'm telling you, we'll be creating problems for ourselves. My take is that the minister will indicate whether the correct course of action is either a ministerial inquiry, of which you know very well that even SAFA did not support the initiative of the minister. So my case is that let's await the minister in his interactions with SAFA, not FIFA, because FIFA, I mean, we must not even say the minister must jump. I mean, we have said they try to assist us here, but it is quite clear that we must zoom in on SAFA. We must push these bodies, these national bodies here, to also begin transforming these international bodies, because they haven't transformed some of these bodies. Our interaction must be as well on the basis that they must transform the world as well. Because very soon, I know the members that are here, they'll be saying, no, Sonava is right. Because Sonava at the moment, Sonava, I'm just making an example, is entering into a clear-cut war with some of the bodies that are staging professional boxing. Because they are going to end up having a professional boxing within themselves. And it is us here who are going to end up saying, no, why? Whereas it is clear that already we are going to end up not having boxing as we understand it here. And my take here is that our take is to go do what is correct, that we've got our national bodies should be empowered, and they must continue with transformation at international level as well. That is what we must push them to. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Radukhoma. Honorable Minister, with due respect, we're not used to be like this in this committee, and you must not think that your committee has got problem. It was maybe today because this thing of SAFA and FIFA and whoever, but I'm promising you that this committee is always discussing transformation problems. And will remain like that, with due respect in front of you, but in future, we don't have meetings like this. When abantwana bebona utata bayatsibatsiba, kodwa ke we'll control, we'll manage. It was very bad. We're not used to have a meeting like this. We apologize up front that next time we won't get what is going on in this committee, especially with the sport. We need social cohesion. If we need social cohesion, we need to be united and one. And when we started this meeting, we have said we are not seeing a transformation in rural areas. That's our main objective, that 20 years you have been trying with your deputy minister, but now come 5 years, we'll fight with you in order that we must achieve what we want in this country. Thank you, Minister.
So thank you, Chair. Look, I think, honorable members, the issue of FIFA is going to require that somehow must have time frames and deadlines with regard to what exactly we want to do. It's open-ended. We went, we wrote a letter to Jerome Valk, and then he gave us a response that he gave us, referring us to Garcia. At the end of the day, we need to take a decision about what we're going to do. And we can't take a decision without SAFA. And SAFA must be in a position to assist us to a certain extent what needs to happen. The option of an inquiry will be a last resort, because if they don't come up with what needs to be done, and a solution to this matter and pressurize FIFA to bring the report and finalize the investigation, then we'll have to take steps as government, and we need to give them deadlines. So when we interact with SAFA, we need to be clear with them in relation to what needs to be done. It's not open-ended. And because if we allow the situation to be with us and leave it just like that, we'll never be in a position to deal with any other allegation in future. And I don't think it must be left open-ended. I've had honorable members, but I'm just giving you feedback in terms of what has been happening in between, that I've gone back in terms of your request and so on, and that answered the question of whose competency is it. It is my competency to investigate in collaboration with that federation that is concerned or any other individual. But it's not a smooth sailing process. In the context of the framework we exist in, both here and internationally, because these bodies are mega independent. You know, when we investigated cricket, there was no problem with ICC. ICC gave us a stamp, you can go ahead. And that's why we're able to investigate and appoint a judge and deal with the issue. Even what Honorable Malachi is suggesting, we can go out of that door and do it. There will be a quick letter from Zurich that you are now interfering with football because you are now investigating matters without our consent. This is the law that was drafted of FIFA, I don't know by who. And those people are advanced, I give them, they are too, I think they have positioned this body as an untouchable. You wouldn't investigate FIFA if you don't want, if they don't want to. What I've seen is that if they don't like you, they want to get rid of you, you will be investigated. And then you will be thrown out, like Jack Warner and all those other people, including Qatar, that guy, Mohammed or whoever. They were thrown out in their own terms. Those people can be investigated and be thrown out, and there will be a quick investigation. But if they don't want, they don't. You know, I don't know what is the difficulty, because this guy was doing match fixing, Perumal, is arrested in Hungary. He's in jail. So the question for us and our investigators, it means that they can go there, do the investigation or whatever, and the people who did this investigation, some of them are basically still alive. So I'm saying that it's a difficult terrain in the sense that you can't do many things the way you want. It means the concession on what must happen must come from SAFA, and SAFA must lead in relation to that. And that's what I'm going to ask them. What do they want to do about this and so on? Because those FIFA people don't play. If they suspend you, they suspend you. And the implication of the suspension, it means that all players withdraw, the league doesn't have recognition. It's a very, very problematic thing, you know, that they do with countries whenever they don't. They even interfere if you basically say to your national team that they are a problem and therefore certain steps must be taken. They say, no, you must know where to play and you can't interfere. Where they really value government support, they'll give you praise, is when they won the World Cup. You'll get the unscientific scores. It is now 9 out of 10, Sepp Blatter. That's what it is. 8 out of 10. How? You got 8 out of 10? Brazil got 9 out of 10. We got 8 out of 10. I mean, really, the stadiums were not finished there. And all of that. And then they move forward. And that was it. So I'm just saying that we will deal with the issue. And then bring closure. Obviously, to deal with that, we have to deal with SAFA. SAFA must lead us in relation to this particular question. Honorable members, what I'm trying to say is that as much as we want to do more, government is constrained by the statutes and in relation to how far we can go as government in terms of dealing with the federation, like football and so on. So we have to deal with that particular matter and bring a close to this issue. So if SAFA says to me tomorrow, write a letter and say, Minister, go on with a ministerial inquiry, we'll do it. There's no doubt about it. We'll do it. If Denis Jordan and his representative say that to me, we must do that, we'll do it. So, but I can't take a unilateral decision that we need an inquiry. I went to Zurich. I asked them, not for an inquiry, and we agreed around the table ourselves. It was a Troika meeting, and them, early hours of the morning, Switzerland, they agreed with me on the way forward. They suggested we issued a joint statement that the South African government will do this. And when we went back, I went to SAFA, gave a report, the matter was closed. And then they gave a pretext that we were dragging, whatever that is the case, of which that was not the point. The point is that in between that process, there was an intervention that was made where in which SAFA, with the advice or interaction with FIFA, was then beginning to say they've got the capacity to investigate, which initially they did not. They said they as FIFA have the capacity to investigate, and they think they must take this thing to their own, I mean, on their own and run with it. And then we realized that there's going to be litigation and all of that. We start the process without what was initially agreed, so we give them the opportunity to go and investigate. And when we wrote a letter and asked when are they finalizing, they referred us to Garcia. And then it was Garcia, and that's where we are now. So, Garcia has even left now, so I don't know who's going to be dealing with the matter. So, for us, the matter is hanging, so we need to make a determination with SAFA, led by SAFA, in terms of what needs to happen. So I can assure members that I want this matter to be closed and finalized as quick as I can. The issues that are raised by Honorable Filtani, which brought us to almost the collapse of this committee.
No, I'm sorry.
Yes. No, just in jest. I think on the question of expenditure and so on, I think those matters we should be in a position to deal with them, as you would have raised them in terms of basically what needs to happen. Ministerial inquiry have addressed that. MEEC versus Commonwealth Games. I didn't understand that, but. Yeah, DG can clarify that issue. I didn't understand Honorable Bergman, what he was saying exactly there. I think done.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I'm suspecting Honorable Bergman was talking about the hosting of whatever in KZN, and then what about the MEEC, the sharing of other provinces. But let me give it to DG, because now...
Honorable Bergman was raising the issue that says typically when a province hosts a big event like that, resources are diverted there, and they tend to benefit from facilities around how do we ensure that all other provinces don't lag behind, and what is the strategy of ensuring that everybody else will get the facilities they require, even though they are not hosting? And secondly, how can the MEEC be utilized as a catalyst to ensure that that does take place? So, in short, a hosting city or province tend to divert their own resources to hosting. They have to put up their hand and say, we will use the event as a catalyst to then
bring up some things that we had done a study with Ernst & Young to look at the current funding of the province of KwaZulu-Natal and the cities surrounding it and eThekwini. How long will it take them to have in eThekwini one facility per ward? And with the current levels of funding, we had made the calculation to be at about 37 years. So that's how long it will take them with the current, just one facility per ward. And that facility, we're using the benchmark of a multi-purpose sport court. So we then said that with the bid for this, if we ask for the money to be brought forward, it will take us only 7 years to achieve that same target. So basically, it is money you would have had to spend over 37 financial years, which you ask the treasury to say, give it to me now. Let me spend it over the 7 years now. And then the money comes in advance. Even this country, had we not hosted the FIFA World Cup, at the current levels of funding, it will have taken us 318 years to build all the stadia that we have built, just with the current funding. But with it, the event became a catalyst to be able to develop this mega infrastructure quickly and so on. So, and the benefits of that then are lasting, because you then can begin using these facilities both for social cohesion, for all of the things and sport development. So essentially in this case, we are asking that the host city must indicate how much in the overall budget is willing to contribute to this. The treasury won't listen to anything until it hears that part. And so if the province needs to support the host city. And therefore, when a city raises its hand, we expect its province to also endorse that. And then it is a mixture and the joint funding by the three spheres of government. Typically, the rest of the provinces need to continue with what they are doing. And we need to insist that the rest of the provinces also have that. But equally, the leadership of the bids, and when they do them, and particularly the LOC, when now you are hosting, we emphasize on a program called the Legacy Program. And that program, really, our chosen legacy, in this case, owing to this thing of the motto of the games, inspiring the youth, we have to look at the youth development programs along sports, meaning the training of youngsters as coaches and all of this, plus the actual programming around sport, meaning club development and community sport, and lastly the facilities themselves that needs to be rolled out. In truth, if you were to ask us, of course the bulk of the money that will be spent on this would go to the what we call the eThekwini city region, meaning the city plus the municipalities that surround it in the immediate vicinity, up until Umgungu Ndlovu, because we intend to hold some things there. So the bulk of the people who will fill the stadia are youngsters who today are around the age of 14. By 2022, they would be at their prime teenagehood and as youth, and these are the people we are targeting to inspire then. And therefore, we would need to start rolling programs now with them in their facilities, and these are the very people who, in their numbers, 80% of the people who must fill the stadium must come from that eThekwini city region. Others will come from the rest of the country, and about 12% from the global audience that comes. And the reality of the matter is that the balance of inspiring these people and getting them to play, and so the bulk of the legacy funds will be spent in the region, with a balance of the other legacy to other provinces to promote the hosting of the games.
Oh, okay. Honorable Minister.
Yes, there's an issue I didn't respond to of Honorable Minister about the entities that come to account and that we must be present. I think as a matter of principle, we are not against appearing before the committee. Obviously, it's going to depend on availability. I mean, we've got many things, cabinet committees, outreach program, parliament and all of that. I think if there is time to do that, permissible within our time, as a matter of principle, we are not opposed to do that. In fact, I think the DG will give you feedback and going forward, including the AG report. If you have been in this committee, if not, go backwards. You'll see the work we've been doing and the challenges that we're faced with. And you'll realize that the situation has not been easy in dealing with those people. But I believe that, look, this is not like FIFA. We have to fix these people and then get the right people into the right positions. And because last time when people came to appear before the committee, they have been dragged into the court in terms of boxing by a certain promoter and all of that, appearing before the committee. And I don't know why the committee is silent. You know the truth about what's happening in boxing. And I don't mind to be criticized for anything, but stand for the truth, for the progress of the country, and help me to bring boxing back. You know the truth why boxing is not on television. It's because of a certain Mr. Pango. It's not me. But when we move out of here, no, it's a minister's problem. You know, Pranko is a fine man, and all of that. You know, Zolani said they went to fight in England because Pranko can't get money in South Africa because of whatever that is the case. And I'm trying to settle with him and outside court, including the fact that we must not go out of our way to spend money to defend. But look at the cases if I don't defend and give instruction to do. This guy is making money out of what you said in the committee. Today, what I said here about him, there is a lawyer will be waiting for me there. I'm suing the minister $7 million for what he said in the committee and all of that. We are stuck with the SABC. Boxers can't fight. Boxing is a lucrative thing. Out of one fight, $10 million, boxers will get probably fight. That's why Bungu and them became rich and blew their money the way they did. But it's because boxing is lucrative. So going out of here, going to Las Vegas, anywhere to fight, you're making money. It's not the child's play. The Department of Sports can't be sponsoring fights which you can get money out of broadcasting. Every time there's got to be a fight here in Eastern Cape that people cry it must be on TV, it's government sponsored. They go to the provinces, ask for money to stage a fight. But it has never been like that. Once boxing is back on television in terms of SAPC, then you've got a sponsor like alcohol, dry gin belt. There's money. You don't need to be asking money from government because those promoters make a kill. But in terms of that, and then share the PEF money, you don't ever stress that all the time the department must pop out money to support a particular fight and all of that. That's the business that must be running. Our concern should be SANAVO. SANAVO. We must support SANAVO because that's where development comes from. And we've got an agreement that we must sign now with the Defense Force on Operation Victory Lap to prepare our athletes in boxing to compete and win medals for us. Because South Africa can't compete in the Olympics. We get global all the time. So with Operation Victory Lap, look at what it has done, Defense Force and government working together in India. You can just think of Indians winning so many medals when they play. Oh, my daughter, how can they surpass us? But because the Indians have implemented the model of the Defense Force in the program of the Olympics. Look at the Commonwealth. They were ahead of South Africa, almost number three. And you will see in the Olympics where they will be. That model is basically working. But all what I'm saying to you, Honorable member, is that we need the committee to also become a voice on issues that you yourself know. If you think that I'm lying and my department, call these people before you. You've got all the powers and ask them, why are you not resolving issues? I'm spending money on court cases defending now some member came in the portfolio committee and Branko took him to court and swing him for how much did he? You see, just for saying in the committee, in fact, even the suing itself is okay. What I'm saying is off the record if it is permissible, but the fact of the matter is that that is what obtains today, and that's what those are the blockages that we're basically suffering at the present moment. And I have basically said that we're going to stop this thing, and this thing's not going to happen, and we need to bring a halt to this thing, and we need to be in favor of the boxer, hence the sports at the Indaba and all of that, which was responding to some of the challenges. We should be long, long ago been on this thing and killed the monopoly. But there is a monopoly issue that we are dealing with, which is going to require even ourselves to go to the Competition Commission. You know that in South Africa, today in terms of the real issues, you can't just wake up and then go and say my boxer will fight at Carnival City. That agreement is done by a few promoters and all of that. You can't. In Carnival City to fight there is a luxury. You fight in the hall in the Ugule Twin Kailija. That's where you end up. You will only see the light one day when you go out of South Africa to basically fight. So it doesn't happen. And when I challenge those things, which is the real struggle, and fight them, even in court, and say, I'm breaking this monopoly, you know, that voice needs to come, because at the end of the day, these guys, what they are doing is that they think they hold a sway over this thing. That's why Zolani Tete had to go and defend in Liverpool in front of a hostile crowd, because, yeah, there are issues that are still made in front of the courts and they are not basically resolved. But I'm not begging off. We're going to put up a fight as we're doing now, and we will support every step of the way in terms of BSA to support, because the reason why they know that BSA, they can make a lot of money, and that money eventually will come from government, is because they know BSA doesn't have the capacity to defend. They don't have resources, they don't have the good lawyers and all of that. Now, if you are a promoter, you can take BSA to court any time, you'll get 2 million. Those people, when the 2 million they have to pay, they come to the DG. Hey, we have lost here 2 million. And all of that, and these people, you know, it's like when you want to make money through the road accident funds. No, I just got into an accident. This guy was drunk. I want 100 million. And then that money, when it's paid, you no longer work. It's a bonus. It's more than a lotto. It's done. No, I got injured 6 years ago. But what happened to you? Why are you so rich? No, it's a road accident fund. I have to do them. And then all of that. So they eat the government money through means, scrupulous means and all of that. That's what happened with BSA. No, BSA, there's no problem. Yes, no, this fight I was supposed to stage. No, you know what? Lonwabo or whoever that is running that thing, he colludes with them. This is off the record, right? Corruption. And then what do? They then go around making a big political statement. Hey, there is a problem. Corruption. No, manga business. And then, the minister was he not aware of this guy, what he was basically doing? It's not that we're not aware, or we are aware, whatever that is the case. The question is that the board, when it's not strong, you put people there, they collapse in the middle of the way. You're going to have those problems of management at the end of the day. But I'm just raising this point to say that we will want to come, but we're dealing with these issues, and we're going to be decisive in dealing with them.
Honorable Minister, we gain a lot today, but as I've said, we've discussed on what we have alluded to, saying that we don't have any problem to call you and your deputy minister when we need you. And we're still saying we don't want to open that. This committee agreed whenever they want you, you must come. But you are not supposed to come every day, as we are saying. We all agreed upon that. And I'm suspecting that Usanabo called Trans Open Victory. They were here last week. and they've told us about everything with the signature of defense. We are happy about that. We are supporting you fully and themselves. As we are sitting here, we are aware that you need to finalize your sport combat bill. And even on that, we know that immediately that the department is doing that, we'll be having less problems. And we have got an understanding that by 2015 December, all is going to be well. We're looking forward and we'll support you. Because now this problem of e-boxing South Africa is even getting into our pocket of the department. They can't even account. And that's the problem. I think something. And we had Usanabo's problem. And with your political understanding and intervention of trying to get legislation, as this committee will support, with those words, honorable members, whenever we want our political heads of this department, you will do so as you have done so and you agreed upon that, you will call them. Won't not saying that, you know, it's our minister. The minister is the minister of this committee. We'll do, minister. You must, we are asking you so that we have taken that decision long ago. It was not supposed to be emerged, but today, something that now is over. We are emphasizing that we invite you whenever. And even if we didn't invite the office, if office want to come and say, Chairperson is here to say, Chairperson, on such and such a day, you want to come and share ABC, because sometimes we don't know what is pressing in your office will tell us. With those words, it was a good day today. Honorable members, let's keep it up as loving South Africans, and let's try to build a sport in order that we must have a social cohesion. We need each other. Thank you so much. Sorry, we defer minutes for next meeting, but now the minister will have a photo with the committee today, please. No, do we want it? No, minister, we want the photo with him. Honorable members, I'm sorry, we have this thing of tomorrow that we must finalize of the interviews. After the photo, let's come back and just 3 minutes, we'll be getting a briefing from the advisors. How are we going to do tomorrow?
Oh, I'm going to go to the hospital.